It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, and Lori are all here. We're going to talk about the worst product Apple ever made. Can't figure out what that is. Apple's shift to ARM processors in the Macintosh starting next year. And a zero-day alert in Apple Mail. Is it really a zero-day exploit? Or has it been oversold? Renee Ritchie has the deets. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 711, recorded Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. Arm Twist. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they demand. Power your site or app with CashFly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news from the Apple experts. Lori Gill is here. It's kind of like sunset in your hair. It's the sun is going down, the darkness is
emerging. There's a little bit of the pink still showing
it's
through.
Perfect. Your hair is a sunset. I love it. Lori, like the rest of us, we were all talking about how we're not getting the hair care we usually get from the trained professionals. I myself have developed wings in a variety of parts of my head. It doesn't seem right, but there's nothing I can. The other choice is Lisa could cut my hair. She says she will, but I think what's worst, a bad haircut or no haircut?
Yeah.
You have a handsome head, Leah. We've seen you bald before.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, there you go. That's Mr. Renee Ritchie of YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie fame.
Leo, I'm looking like the illegitimate love child of Bill Clinton and Don King.
Something's just different. Are these new glasses? What's going on here?
No, it's just like this situation. And you know, for like a young person on Vine or I'm dating myself already on TikTok, they don't have no expectations. This would be great. I would just be going like this.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have to hide my shame.
I'll never forget the day I found Kevin Rose and Dan Heward, this is back in the screensavers, in the dressing room, putting product in their hair, making their hair stick up and out. And I thought,
messy. Yeah, they
why
product
are you
messy.
Doing that? It's Bedhead. They were literally using a product called Bedhead.
Yeah.
Don't you want to comb it? Oh, God, Leo, you're so old.
If you scratch our surface, you find more surface.
Andy Anacco is also here. He's smart enough to wear a hat. Hello, Andy.
Hello. Actually, I'm thinking about finally living the dream and getting the haircut like Vivian from The Young Ones. You know,
yeah, very nice.
Cornflakes, cornflakes, cornflakes.
Yeah, now, without professional tending, do the sideburns go crazy or?
Oh no, I do. I've always been trimming my sideburns. I think that now this is I'm not judging anybody there are a lot of people who are growing beards for the first time. I'm not judging. Go fly whatever flag you want to fly. It's, you know, you be you. I'm just saying that there is a difference between having a beard or mutton chops or facial hair or mustache and simply not wanting to shave. And that difference, young men, is in grooming and trimming. Meaning you at first have to grow it out so that you get a shape, but then you have to get scissors or clippers or something and trim them into shape. This way, you don't at the park, they don't just let the hedge go wherever it wants to go. At some point, you got to square that thing off. That's all I'm saying.
We're talking about intent, young people. Intent.
Yeah. Yes, it's not haphazard.
As a result, I do have like the barbershop grade buzzers, like with the attachments, like in my bathroom, and I'm pretty sure that within the next couple of weeks, I'm just going to buzz my hair.
Yeah,
because I think if I try to give myself a haircut, it'll look kind of pathetic. Whereas if I just simply say, "How about a half an inch? Let's like 30 mil all around." That'll be okay.
That's the easy way to do it.
On Sunday, Ian Thompson was here, and Ian has used quarantine to grow what is perhaps the most lovely mustache I have ever seen. He looks like, can you see him? He looks like James Bond, you know, or maybe who is that British actor with a salt and pepper mustache?
Clouseau, isn't it? Clouseau.
He's kind of Clouseau. Got that. He's kind of
well,
got
he's
that
the French
look.
Diff.
I feel like he should have a riding crop. I don't know.
Burt Reynolds. He looks like Burt Reynolds.
It's Poirot. It's
Poirot.
Pretty.
Oh, it's Poirot. Louis.
We decided to do a formal wear on Twit on Sunday. And mostly it's because of Ian's mustache. It's just like, it just, you know, if you have a mustache like that, you've got to wear a dinner jacket. I mean,
you got to lean into it.
You got to lean into it. Yeah. If I thought I could get a mustache that looks like that, I would do it.
A handlebar Leo or like a, is that how you would go? Like full on slightly, slightly whiplash? Like
yeah. I don't know.
go for the full Swiss beard competition. The kind that like actually like is like a big novelty pretzel.
When this all began in our area, it was March 17th, because I remember because it was St. Patrick's Day. I told Lisa, this is a great opportunity. I just won't shave till quarantine's over. she said,
no sleep till Brooklyn.
No.
Yeah.
No. He's got a definite Basil Fawlty look to it, or almost a Mr. Bean. Could almost be a Mr. Bean. Anyway, it's very British, you can tell.
Very good.
Yeah, Brigadier.
Well, also one last tip. Make sure you have an upper lip, because I have an overbite, which means that like if I were to like it, which is fine mostly, but if I grow a mustache, like the upper lip sort of collapses when I close my mouth, and so it looks like I'm just holding a pencil between my upper lip and my nose.
Good. That's not good. How can you figure that out ahead of time? There must be an app for that.
Well, yeah. chiefly because like I used to write these things called books, which meant that for the last month before deadline, I would not shave at all because I have no mental bandwidth for anything but typing and researching and yelling at certain software companies, say, hi, you said that this feature in this pre-release operating system you're going to give me, we're going to be ready in a time. Anyway, so that's at some point you have the entire beard. And then once you're done and you shave it off, All men understand this. You never shave off a beard in one go. You always just do the werewolf transition. Say, how would I look like it? What would I look in mutton chops? What would I look like in a goatee? What would I look like in a mustache? And then you go for the, let's say, the Stan Laurel toothbrush mustache, because you gotta.
That's the full-on Wolverine, Andy. The full-on Wolverine. Oh, well, Andy and Logan.
Man, I'm rocking that. Like that's my winter look.
You got the.
I wonder if beard grooming companies are going to be making a lot of money right now.
We actually have a new sponsor, Manscaped, that's perfect for this. Unfortunately, they're not on the show today. I wish they were. I'd love to do a Manscaped ads right now. So the big story of the week is really kind of a surprise. You know, I just got the finally got it. It took them a little while. The Magic Keyboard to go with my iPad Pro. And I had, you know, I had kind of hypothesized that with the new iPad OS mouse and trackpad support, that maybe Apple was just going to not try to make its Macs be ARM-based. Maybe they were just going to see a natural division, as I do, between the Intel-based trucks, and then the iPad and iOS would become the kind of the mobile operating system. Well, according to Mark Gurman, I was wrong. Apple, starting next year, will sell Macs with its own chips. Of course, its own chips will be, you know, somewhat akin to the A13 ARM architecture based. So my speculation clearly wrong. Apple.
They were just waiting for you, Leo. They waited until you said it on a show. They just always do that to us.
So I guess it wouldn't be the A13, it'd be the A14 next year.
Yeah.
What do we know? First of all, do you all think this is credible? Lori, is this, I mean, Mark's pretty good on this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I think this is most likely where Apple's going, and 2021 seems like a reasonable amount of time considering how long we've been hearing this kind of rumor come out. I think actually it was originally estimated that they might be out by 2020, but I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why that would get pushed back. Even, you know, just the fact that the chip's not ready yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know Apple's been working on this kind of thing, so 2021 seems about right.
Wow. One computer, all of them. The project is called Kalamata.
Weird, like,
Kalamata is a Greek olive. I don't know if that's a clue of any kind.
Yeah, I mean, the Intel one was codenamed after the aliens from South Park. So I was hoping that this would be named after the aliens from like Seth MacFarlane's show or something. But what's weird to me is that there's been so much back and forth chatter. Like a bunch of analysts leaned really hard earlier this year saying Apple was not going to go ARM on the Mac. So hard that I was wondering if they were hearing things from AMD. And a lot of people have been asking for AMD Macs now, especially when we've seen the relative performance gains they've gotten first on desktop with Threadripper and their Ryzen architecture, and now on the latest laptops that have come out that are just, you know, they're spinning boards around what Intel is doing at the moment. But then, you know, Gurman, who reported on this a year or so ago, I think you already mentioned Kalamata and a bunch of other parts of this, reiterated that they were going to go this way. And it's interesting to me because what is the strategy? We don't know. And I'm saying, like, outside of Apple, we don't know how high they've scaled these chips. Like, obviously, their performance is as good as a MacBook. Do they have anything internally that is as good as a iMac, as good as a Mac Pro? What would that look like? Would this be like, right now we have ARM coprocessors and Intel main processors. Would that switch around so we'd have ARM main processors and Intel coprocessors, at least for a few generations? Or would they go split it between ARM and AMD and just leave Intel out in the cold? It's such a fascinating time right now.
This is the tweet, which maybe crystallizes it a little bit. News story, Apple plans to start switching. I think that's an important word here, from Intel to custom Mac ARM processors by 2021. Company is working on at least three chips, some with 12 plus cores.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what a 12-core A14 would look like compared to, say, a 10-core Intel chip.
I think that's how you scale ARM, though, right? I mean, when we've seen on servers, they scale cores and then they scale blades because it's a very different architecture than x86 and ARM 64.
Right. So is it even not even comparable? You can't even compare ARM. My only experience with ARM running desktop operating systems is Windows on ARM, which is not very fun.
No, Windows 10X or 1010. Leo, I'm so confused about what an X means.
X, I think, in Microsoft terms. But even that, they've released, HP released the HP Envy X2, which was a horrible, unusable ARM. The Surface Go, I think the Surface Go is ARM, and I think the Surface X is ARM. And or am I wrong on that? Maybe the Go is Intel and the Surface X is ARM.
The Surface X is ARM.
Yeah, it's ARM. And it's not great. And there's also compatibility issues. Now, I know Apple would do a better job. They did with the Intel transition. But what kind of performance could we expect, even with a 12-plus core ARM?
On a laptop, way better than Intel's giving us right now. It's not performance so much as it's performance efficiency, which is a fancy analyst term for how much performance you get for how much watt of power, which in our purposes means how hot does the damn thing get and how long can it sustain performance before it has to throttle down.
Well, I know all that's important, but if it doesn't but sluggish is not good, and even if it's low power. And you know, I mean, Windows on ARM is Microsoft says all day battery life. Great. But if it's sluggish, no day battery.
It's faster than a MacBook now.
Yeah. On synthetic benchmarks, yes. The problem is iOS software isn't the same as Mac software. It's just not the same. So we don't know.
I do think that this will help partition Apple's Pro line versus its consumer line of Macs. For years of consumers have been given sort of conflicting information conflicting indications of, gee, I've got $1,000, I've got $1,200, I got $1,200. Should I buy a mid-range or low-range MacBook, or should I buy a top-of-the-range iPad? And toward that effect, there are a lot of new apps, there are a lot of new functions that are designed to be transparent between which platform you're using. So I could easily see them deciding to switch to ARM for all the consumer-oriented Macs, anything that doesn't have a Pro on it, because this is where you can get the most efficiencies. It's not just about speed; it really is about appropriateness. As Rich said, this is a place where if you are buying a super super slim ultrabook style MacBook or MacBook Air, you really do want the difference between getting 8 to 10 hours of battery life and 10 to 20 hours of battery life is the difference between absolutely positively for sure having to make sure you recharge it at the end of the night to you've checked out of your hotel at 11 a.m. Your flight home is at 8. It got delayed another 4 hours, and you unexpectedly had to be able to use your notebook for 20 hours, and you just barely made it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. When I say I don't know if they will put ARM on the pro level machines, I'm saying literally I don't know, because every time I've talked to engineers about different chip structures, they've never introduced ARM. They've never introduced the ARM platform as an option that they would, as an engineer, consider for high performance computing. It does scale up very nicely, but in terms of making a single desktop computer, it has limitations that they don't like. But unfortunately, I didn't get a really, really clear explanation on the real technical details of why. So I'm saying my knowledge set right now does not include ARM equals potentially the sort of stuff that would give you really, really, someone who would spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a Mac would not expect the performance that I associate with ARM processors, no matter how you configure them. But this is all speculation. We don't know what Apple is creating under the hood. And the last part of this is that one of the reasons why ARM on Windows doesn't work as well as most people would like is that Microsoft has the ability to propose, to encourage, to urge. They don't have the ability to say, number one, we are designing every component of this laptop. We are making every hardware choice and architecture decision based on the fact that we can engineer and build anything that we want go into this. Also, we're not just building the operating system. We have the absolute dictatorial ability to arm twist every single developer into doing exactly what we want to do. Because if they want to be able to sell a Mac app, they're going to have to be able to sell it through the Mac App Store. And if we want to say that, by the way, you're going to have to have a bouncing flying toaster logo going through your entire app at all times, they can make that demand and make it stick. So there's so much potential here on the Mac platform that isn't there on Windows or even Linux. So it's very exciting.
So at some point, is Intel out of the entire loop, or are you saying that you think there'll be some high end, like a Mac Pro or an iMac Pro, will be Intel, continue to be Intel?
If I were to put money, I would say that they would hang on to Intel for no other reason, the fact that there are a Mac will last at least 5 or 6 years. Unfortunately they don't build crummy computers at Apple, and I've got a 2012 Mac Mini right here that's still working just fine. I finally, out of boredom, almost out of boredom, I'm going to be upgrading it like later this year. But then this 2012 Mac Mini will go elsewhere in the office and still do daily productive work. So they're going to have to support Intel for the linear future. However, I do think if my understanding of what chip you use with what type of system is still current, and it may not be, like I said, I would assume that they're going to still go with Intel for the super high performance stuff, if only because they're going to need a long period of convincing the people who buy computers based on the money they can make with them that you are not making a bad bet. You're not going to have a situation where your Photoshop plugins do not work. You're not going to have situations where you're not going to be able to do this 8K, this app that you need to do this 8K project. They haven't built an ARM version of this product yet. I feel as though we're going to see it's going to be a situation where the user does not know what CPU they're running in the system. They're going to make that as transparent as possible. Nonetheless, if you anything that has a pro sticker at the end of it is almost certainly going to have an Intel CPU in it.
And you got to imagine their deal with Intel is such that they get profound advantages from sticking completely with Intel. Because I know everybody sort of says, why wasn't the Mac Pro ARM? Oh, sorry, AMD. Why wasn't the MacBook Pro AMD? Like Apple would switch off on a one-to-one basis based on product. But they get early access to Intel Silicon. Intel makes things specific, like changes the board designs for them. They work with them on things like PowerNap before the chips come out. And Apple suffers because those chips are quite often delayed. But still, I don't think that they would enjoy the relationship with Intel they have if they started doing piecemeal. And Apple just doesn't buy commodity parts, period. But if they started doing sort of a piecemeal thing, I don't think that they would have the same sort of advantages.
So Just the timeline for the last time Apple did this, the PowerPC to Intel transition. They announced it at WWDC 2005.
Wasn't that a great announcement, though? Like when he said it's been living a double life, and then he zooms in on that building in Cupertino, yeah. And he showed, like, that was like, it's up there as one of Steve's best presentations.
They completed it by the end of 2007. So it took them a year and a half, and they had no more PowerPC Macs, period. The software transition, of course, takes longer. They had Rosetta for a long time. They had Carbon and Cocoa. They had a variety of platforms. But they could do that now. That's one of the reasons, I'm sure that's one of the reasons for, what is it called? The avocado. What do they call the putting ARM apps on a Macintosh? I can't remember.
Anyway. Oh, Catalyst.
Catalyst. I knew it was one of them.
Yeah, it was Marzipan originally. You got caught in the middle.
Marzipan, that's it.
Yeah.
Catalyst, yeah.
Catamarzipan.
So I'm sure part of the reason for that is that's the same kind of application layer, right? And so...
But it's opposite. So
it's
like,
the wrong direction.
And I've asked, and it doesn't go both ways.
Except if you think about it, what they would like to do is have everybody develop ARM software from now on. Just stop doing Intel software. And if we can still run it on old machines, okay, that's fine. That's kind of what Rosetta
UI will
was,
play an
right?
even bigger part in that, right? Because you describe, like, this is a button and it is red. And it doesn't matter if it's running on ARM or Intel. Yeah. Doesn't matter if it's running on an iPad or an iPhone, an Apple TV or a Mac. You have done, like, everyone gasped at WWDC when they did that. But that declarative power, when we start thinking about transitioning architectures, and they're so smart, they've been doing, and this might all fall apart, but I'm going to say they are so smart in that they've been doing things like abstracting the silicon layer so you interface with metal and it dispatches it to the CPU, the GPU, or the accelerators on the T2 chip without you knowing about it, which is why they don't work with NVIDIA, by the way. But like they've done that, and they've done the bit code where if they change the processor, they went to 64-bit on the Apple Watch and didn't have to tell anybody anything. It just worked.
So that's a good point. Metal helps a lot with this transition because it abstracts the hardware layer. Yeah.
And this has been part of theology at Apple for, I think, now decades. That was part of the sales pitch on OS X from the very beginning, that it was built from the ground up to be processor independent. So if they wanted to pivot at any point in the future, they could do exactly that. And the message from Apple consistently over the past 5 or 10 years has been so consistent. It has not been, please write for the hardware that we tell you to write. It's always been, here are the rules we are creating for creating Mac software. We insist that you stick by these rules only, to the considerable pain of a lot of top-tier developers out there, where, look, the thing is, this new API that you've created doesn't work or does not suit our purposes in any way, shape, or form. But we've got this old – we're using your old API that we've been tuning for 10 years and works perfectly and flawlessly. And not only that, but is the linchpin of one of our users' favorite features. And now you're telling us to drop all of our tools, stop supporting our actual users, and devote 9 months to a year of development to totally retool our app from the ground up just to support what we think is a faulty API. Where do you come from, Apple? What they can't say is that we are trying to move to a world in which nothing that you write will ever depend on the presence or absence of any piece of hardware existing in any Mac. So that the people, oddly enough, the kids that are 10 to 15 years old who maybe grew up coding Swift are in a much, much better position to create a new word processor right now than the people who've been writing Mac software for 30 years. Not because they're necessarily more clever, but because every scrap of code that they put into their Pikachu text editor has been based on the very, very latest APIs, just trusting Apple to use whatever they're throwing at them. So they're the people who will be able to click a checkbox, or actually there probably won't be a checkbox in Xcode. It'll just automatically create an ARM build of this thing. They're the ones that will say, I don't know why these older people are complaining. It was easy as pie to create a version of my app for ARM. Well,
that's one big difference between this PowerPC transition to Intel. Apple is much better poised. Lori, do you think Apple dips in with just one device next year, slowly moves?
Yeah, I do. I think they will start small, maybe with laptops only, maybe with the lower end laptops only, and then work their way up. And I think that has to do with fear from pros as to whether or not this is going to be as good as it needs to be. So you start small. You start with the consumer-based MacBooks, like a MacBook Air. And if everybody's cool with that, then you move on to something a little bit bigger so that the people who need the pro machines aren't just like, oh no, this is terrible. I just bought this computer and it's awful. So
that's
it kind of gives them
concern. Yeah. If they spent $6,000 on a Mac Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they'll roll it out slowly.
It's obsolete already.
Yeah. Yeah.
So give us sketch out a timeline, Lori. What do you see next
year?
Well,
you know, the way you described when Apple had previously announced moving to Intel, now I'm starting to wonder if it's not that they will announce in 2021 that they're moving, though the discussion that we're having now, which is that you don't really have to tell anybody, you can just do it. So I'm going to say 2021 around WDC around June, so that by the fall, those new
MacBook Air Macs will be the first one you do. If they're still making a MacBook, you'd do
or
that.
A new 12-inch MacBook.
Either a 12-inch MacBook or a new MacBook Air. Yeah.
Actually, if you did the MacBook, because the MacBooks always perform terribly. So if you did a MacBook and it actually performed better than the old one.
Exceed expectation. The other thing that's super interesting is that back then you were super dependent on things like Adobe and Microsoft Office, where there's like people just use Google Docs online, you know, and people are using that on the iPad now.
Well, the whole world, that's actually the truth, is the whole world has changed. The operating systems are irrelevant now. Because basically everything's in the cloud and everything's through a browser. So,
and what I wonder is if because last time they had these clunky developer machines, but I wonder if they say for developers only, we're not putting Mac OS on iOS devices, but for developers only, download these special builds onto your iPad Pro or brand new whatever 8K Apple TV, and you can use that to simulate Mac on ARM while we're getting all the new hardware ready.
Yeah.
With your new Magic Keyboard.
I feel as though if they did that, it would be under double secret NDA probation, because as soon as if anybody knows that there is some piece of code that will allow them to run an actual Mac app on this iPad, probably particularly the one that they just paid $1,000 or $1,300 for, that there are going to be people at iMore at 9to5 Mac on XDA on every site that will say here is where to get the code. Here is how to install it. Here's all this command line stuff you need to get it done. And the last thing they want, but it is a great point that they think that we've been seeing this merging of the low end Mac stuff with the higher end or the productivity oriented iPad stuff for several years now. I've complained so much that I've been complaining about it that you're clipping the Mac's wings so that it can fly in the under the envelope that is provided by iPad. You're not letting the damn thing soar. And it's an interesting idea to see now that they share CPUs. One of the little side note advantages of switching to Intel at the time was that, hey, I wonder if Apple will be able to actually run Windows apps natively. And of course, now there's a dual boot mode. Now I think the other side note will be, what if there is actually shared CPU between these two platforms? Would it be possible for me now to, as opposed to having a Mac app and a iPhone app that communicate well with each other and have a consistent experience, is it possible that I can run an app on my Mac that doesn't even know it's running on a laptop that runs Mac OS, that it's simply running, it's simply a different instance of this exact same app? For some apps, it wouldn't be limiting so much, like an Instagram app, you don't really care. A Facebook app, you should care because you care enough not to run any Facebook app ever. But the idea that you can, there are apps that are low overhead enough and that you can finally be able to run, let's say, TikTok as a Mac app, all the stuff we've been asking for. Gee, it would be great to be able to post from my Mac. What if it was just, you don't have to even choose. You can just simply run the exact same app you're running on mobile.
It is interesting to look at at least what Mark Gurman says, and again, we're going to assume that he has good sources. The first Mac processors will have 8 high-performance cores, codenamed Firestorm. This is much like they do with the iPhone and the iPad right now. And then 4 energy-efficient cores known as Ice Storm, because they're running cooler. That's kind of what they do right now with iOS. They have, and this is the advantage of custom silicon. You understand much better than any general chip manufacturer could understand what the needs will be. So you can really balance it. In some Macs, Apple's designs will double or quadruple the number of cores that Intel provides. The current entry-level MacBook Air is dual core. I think this is very interesting. How much of an ARM processor will it be, and how much of an Apple processor will it be? They own
but
they're an architecture licensee.
Yes, so it has to be the instruction set, or it wouldn't function. Like that's the whole thing. So it's going to be Apple design. Like they're not using an ARM reference design, which some companies do. Like they get the Cortex A13 or something, and then they implement exactly the design of the processor that ARM has created, and they just make their version of it. Apple uses the instruction set, so it's compatible with ARM, but the design is completely Apple's. So it'll be 100% ARM in terms of how it works, 100% Apple in terms of the way, like the complete design of the silicon, from how wide it is to, you know, how much cache it has to how many, like all of that is Apple.
ARM is a RISC processor, reduced instruction set, and it operates somewhat differently than Intel. I'm not, you know, I used to be more up on how things work. Is it big endian or little endian, or
I get in trouble for saying it's big little. So to me, like because Apple's architecture since the A10 has been what they call fusion, and that means they have performance cores and they have efficiency cores,
right. That's
and the efficiency cores will run normally. The current ones are Lightning and Thunder. And so Thunder is the efficiency cores, and there's four of those. And then there's two high-performance cores, Lightning, but they use a lot more power. So they try to use those more conservatively. So they're really performance.efficiency, not big-little, because it's not in terms of the byte size that they're operating on. It's in terms of how much actual processing power they need. And that's how Apple's doing. And Apple's efficiency cores are more powerful than their old performance cores, which always blows my mind, and more efficient. The whole thing is nuts.
There's a certain advantage to doing it in-house. I mean, big-time advantage, right?
Google's trying to do it again. Like, Google and Samsung was doing Exynos processors for a while, right. And that just recently collapsed. But, you know, they're trying to keep some part of it going. Google was pillaging the Silicon Valley, hiring everybody. And for some reason, the team fell apart. And now they have a new team that might also be working with the Samsung team. And it's very interesting, but it shows you. And Google does custom silicon for their servers for years. They're really good at it. They just haven't done mobile silicon. But it really shows you how much Apple is getting out of that and how many other companies want to start getting. And all, of course, Kirin from Huawei has been going for years too.
Yeah, part of the reason it's hard to do Exynos is because of licensing with Qualcomm and radios and all of that. They never could use Exynos in the U.S.
because Apple doesn't care. Samsung does.
Apple doesn't care. Yeah. Apple doesn't care. That's the right.
And it's unforgiving. Like, silicon is absolutely unforgiving. When there are bugs in software, you know, like they can be fixed. When there's bugs in hardware, it's like hemming and when there's bugs in silicon, as Intel has learned painfully over the years, that's it. That's it for generations.
Yeah. That's why I still think that it's going to start off with the lowest end Macs out there. They're most people who spend X dollars at the bottom end of the market. The CPU on that device spends most of its time causing your cursor to flash while you consider the next keystroke. So, and they're not necessarily making money off of these. It's essentially a Chromebook that runs games and some other nice Mac apps out there. So there isn't a lot of skin in the game making these people, quote, suffer, unquote, CPU-wise or even reliability-wise, so long as you give them things that are really tangible features for them, such as a really, really wonderful $799 entry-level MacBook, or the ability to have an 18-hour battery instead of a hopefully 10 to 12-hour battery.
Remember, though, that from Apple's point of view, they can lead the way with software because they make, I would guess, the most popular programs to run on Mac OS. Between Pages and Numbers and Final Cut, and I mean they're still a little beholden to Adobe, so they'd have to convince Adobe to put out ARM versions of their programs.
They can't even get good Google versions of the iPad app, so there's going to be a limit to what they can do. Yeah. But I think, like, if the demand is high enough, they can shame some of the companies. And Adobe is busy porting Photoshop. I mean, they've got some Photoshop on iPad already.
Right.
Yeah.
What if they said to Adobe, look, we're going to – this is crazy talk. This is the exact opposite of what you all have been saying. What if they said our highest-end machine is going to be on a new A14X processor? And Adobe, if you want to play, you better get a version of that out and running. And, of course, all of Apple's – I'm sure somebody at Apple's working on that right now to make sure that Final Cut works on it. Logic. What if they did that? What if they said, hey, pros, we got a new way to go? You think, Lori, that that would offend the people who've bought Mac Pros this year? It's so different, right? It's so different.
It is, yeah.
So maybe they can say, because power is not an issue with a desktop at all. You can your TPU could be as high as you want, and it's quite high on the Xeons.
But are you really going to get $33,000 out of somebody and say, oh, by the way, this is a brand new architecture. We are the first people to try it. Please tell us if it blows up.
But what if you could say credibly, it's faster, it's better, it does everything better.
But there's going to be a whole bunch of people. Like, there's going to be a whole bunch of pros who are going to tell you flat out getting the last generation Intel Mac is such a better buy than getting the first generation ARM Mac. And they're going to believe that for two. Like, Alex and Lindsay's are going to sit back and go, okay, you guys, you bloggers, you YouTubers, have
don't
fun.
They hate Intel at this point?
Yeah, but it's the devil they know, and as opposed to the devil they have never met before and might, you know, be even worse, but they're not quite sure yet. And they're willing to let you play with that devil for a year or so, see how it really runs, and then they'll make the move when they have to, because they buy an enterprise scale.
And that's a very, very wise move for them. Even I, just as a regular consumer, I'm not very keen on buying. Every time that Apple switches to – does a redesign of the MacBook when the case design particularly changes radically, I don't want to be the first person to buy that platform. I want to buy the Rev B motherboard, or I even want to buy the next version of that next year. Only because you are the first. That group is the last level of beta testing. You don't know what the weaknesses of a certain design are going to be until you get people using them by the hundreds of thousands on actual day-to-day business. And the people who are, again, taking – yeah, I got 30 – we forget exactly what $32,000 can buy if you want to custom assemble something that runs Linux or Windows. That is a bit, and the people who have $32,000 to buy, they really don't have loyalty to anything except for the ability to get things done. So I think that it would be interesting if Apple were to, as part of the pitch that they make to everybody, saying that our first models are here's the roadmap for AMD. Our first model, of course, is going to be where it benefits the consumers best, and those consumers are our casual consumers, our consumer consumers. But here is, like, they will maybe even have it on the dais just to prove to ourselves that this is scalable. We've created the most powerful Mac that's ever been, which is also the almost more powerful than the most powerful desktop that's ever been created. And there'll be the beautiful glamour shot of the thing that kind of looks, kind of has like a crappy case on it because they want to indicate that this is not for sale. But just to prove ourselves that this thing will actually work, we've made this on, it's the best Mac you can't possibly buy, and then beat 1, 2, 3 yet. they'll have to actually demonstrate that, yes, if you are invested in the Mac, this is not a good opportunity for you to finally switch to Windows, as some upstarts in your community or upstarts in your business have been saying, because we are not going to trash our performance or our reputation on a new platform that has a really, really hard ceiling on performance on it.
That's why I like what Lori said about the low-end Mac first. Like, if you get out the 12-inch MacBook or whatever replaces that, and maybe it's got whiz-bang features because it's got an A14 and it does Face ID now and a bunch of stuff like that, bezel-less design, it's really pretty, but it's clearly not a pro machine. The pros can sort of sit back and watch us like we're in a zoo, and they're just like looking outside the cage, throwing a couple peanuts, and like we're tapping away on these things saying, okay, they're not pro machines yet, but I can see where you're going with this, Apple. And then like a year, 2 years, 3 years, the pro version comes out and they've all been boiled in the water, and now they want that, you know, that the performance that they're seeing out of the machine.
They're begging for it at that point, right? Like if Apple does this well and markets it well, we're going to hear pros saying, no fair, where's my ARM chip?
Yeah.
And then they'll be excited for it.
They've done this. Maybe there's an analogy with the move to metal. Pros were using OpenGL. Apple never really supported it very well. Pros wanted OpenCL. Apple was pushing it and then said, nah, screw it. We're going to do metal. And that's very similar to this, right? Saying, look, just stop it with the OpenGL, OpenCL. I remember Alex Vulcan. Apple wasn't thrilled about it. It certainly made it impossible to use NVIDIA. But at the same time, if you could say, look, we've made this transition. Here's a better technology. I would, you know, and remember also pros, and I'm not a pro, so we'll ask Alex, but I would guess pros don't mind buying another $100,000 system every few years because they're just going to charge it back to the customer. They want the best, fastest thing that's out there at any given time. I doubt very many pros stayed with a trash can Mac for more than a year.
No, they gave them down, though. Those were, they were the people, the poor people in the render farms were dealing with those. Like,
feel like everybody, Intel has really earned a terrible reputation at this point.
Meltdown and delays, and they're being unable to get to the latest process nodes until now. Yeah, it's just one thing after another.
This is going to be a 5-nanometer chip.
Yeah. Now, to get quantum interesting at that point.
Well, that's right. In fact, TSMC now says they're looking at a 3-nanometer process, which is absolutely.
But that's a marketing name. It's not. It's not the actual.
Really, be 3 nanometers. Yeah.
Yeah.
The X factor though is that on a lot of the performance you can get on Linux and Windows is because you have people who have known how to program, how to target these specific processors for a long time, and they're squeezing so much performance out of there that Intel, frankly, never baked in to begin with. So there's. I don't think that it's enough to trump the idea of having a true agile modern processor. However, there's going to be I have to assume that as is true in gaming, that in certain high level pro apps, that a lot of the performance is not necessarily because you're using a Intel processor that's based on a very, very old architecture and a company that is so busy providing the CPUs to the entire world that they can't provide the best processor for your specific computer. They've been allowing developers to have far greater access to the mechanics of their CPUs than Apple or any sane creator would ever allow. So we're going to see some performance differences that come not from hardware but because of the skill of software developers. And fortunately, the Mac is a closed case. It's its own little ecosystem. And developers are not used to being able to create those performance tweaks as they have on other platforms. But there's a lot of variables that we're going to be coordinating. My spreadsheet has gone 8-layer and 3D at this point in trying to figure out how this will change the terrain for the next 5 years.
You kind of made one point that I think is interesting. There's not a lot of differentiation at this point if you're a pro between Linux, Mac, and Windows.
Yeah.
So this would be a big differentiator. You would be saying, look, we're only Apple makes these chips. The only way you can get this is Apple. I think if you can convince people that there's the performance benefit. And
Jerry Hildenbrand's article on Android Central about the advantages of Apple's custom silicon in the iPhone SE just blew up all over last week. And if you think about it, there's no such article like that for Macs.
Yeah.
And that for a company that thrives on differentiation to create better experiences, that's a problem that needs solving.
It's clear. You could see Apple's reasoning for doing this. That's crystal clear. I really was surprised when they announced the Intel move because I really liked PowerPC chips. I really, really liked them. They did the right thing in hindsight.
But it was a necessity, because the roadmap wasn't there.
But this time, you can really see a lot of strong reasons for Apple just to abandon Intel and differentiate the market. And who cares about x86 anymore? Is there anybody who says, oh, x86, it's got to be x86? I don't think so. I really don't. I wonder if
x86 fanboys.
Yeah, well, there's always those fanboys. But I really wonder if there's not an opportunity for Apple to say, look, we're going a different way, and you should come along because it's going to be much better.
And nobody thinks Apple's going to license x86 and make their own x86 chips, right?
No.
That's just way out there.
No. Why would they?
That is a good...
Even Intel didn't want to do x86. They tried to abandon it for years.
Yes.
And they couldn't.
And now AMD is doing chiplets.
Yeah, that's why, by the way. Yeah, that's exactly why Intel want to get rid of it.
Yeah. But just quickly, that is a good observation. We often think of the fact that the Adobe Creative Suite is not only multi-platform. You really can't, if whatever skills that you learn on Mac, you can easily transfer over to the Windows version of it. Most people's understanding of Docs is through Google Docs or something else that's multi-platform. If they're Office people, they're working on Microsoft Office, which also is easy to switch from one to another. If Apple does this really, really well, we've been talking so much about pros, if Apple even doesn't necessarily try to start competing with with $500 or $600 Intel-based Windows notebooks, which are really, really excellent machines, or three or four hundred dollar Chromebooks. If they simply say that we are competing with the bottom of the high end of Windows, so but for $900, we are going to be able to deliver the performance that you would normally have to get off of a $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 i7 or i9 based laptop that only lasts for 5 or 6 hours on battery. And yet, not only are you editing these videos in Premiere just as fast as you are on that machine that costs twice as much, but also you are getting a full day of battery life out of it. The world has turned upside down in just 3 or 4 months, but now, so maybe this is my attitude, that am I actually foreseeing a future in which possibly Apple says that you should buy a Mac because it's cheaper than a Windows machine for the stuff that you want to do with it?
You just made me think that we don't care about battery life anymore because all of us are sitting at home. Everything's plugged in all the time. Do you even sell battery life anymore?
That's the thing. I think we all are so fixated on the idea that ARM is going to give you this great battery life that we're thinking MacBook or MacBook Air. I'm thinking maybe they won't go that way, or maybe they, I mean, obviously they will, but maybe they will also say, well, we could also make a very credible case for the high end.
Well, look at the iPhone SE. Like, the iPhone SE has the exact same battery life as the iPhone 8, but with a processor that is immensely more powerful, with much more powerful radios, Wi-Fi, all of those things, same battery life. And that's the other way you can go, because, again, it's not just performance, it's performance right. efficiency. So you can get more performance at the same efficiency level. And then they could say, well, look, the old MacBook, you know, these Core, I'm never going to not call them Core M Intel. I don't care how many times you change the branding. They're Core M. Look, these Core M laptops can't even do one stream of 4K. Terrible. Look at this one. Awful. Six streams of 4K.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying, you know, it might be sensible for Apple just to say, go all in. I don't know. Well, this is going
to
be exciting.
Well, they have to start small, and they have why? To start where they have impact, because it's about appropriateness for what they can do. What can they accomplish right now? Just this. I keep thinking about the conversations at NASA in the 60s. I'm sorry for another twisted analogy, but at NASA, after Sputnik, they were like, what can we do right now? Okay, yes, the moon, that's on the chalkboard for 10 years from now, but we can't do that right now. What can we do right now?
Well, we're planning this for 5 years minimum.
But it's not just it's not completely under their control. The persons that they need to, that they can most easily sell to first, are the people who do not know and do not care what's inside their machine. All they care about is price and features and suitability for what they want to do. This is something that Apple can absolutely explode out the door with. Whereas if their first offering is, here is our $10,000 pro model, here's our high end model, you have everybody who is asking you, okay, but how many cores? Okay, but how many cores are dedicated to this? Okay, well, how many channels do you have for this address bus? And do you have an actual running demo of this app that I always use? You can easily get the people who are walking in with expecting to spend $1,300, who unexpectedly are walking out with $200 extra dollars in their pocket, with a machine that is as good as anything they ever asked for and more. That's the thing. And once you've got that base already in there, once you've got the people whose needs are, once again, let's load up a web page, let us load up Google Docs, let us be able to use our games and our simple things that don't really stress things a lot. They collect a year or two's worth of data on, here is how this CPU behaves under actual conditions that we can't control and that we never wired up for back in the labs. And that stuff informs the decisions that go into the $10,000 pro level Macs. And that's when you're making the pitch to developers and the rest of the world, you're saying that this is a true proven architecture. Here we've got here is the stability feedback that we've gotten off of 10 years of Intel, and here's the stability data that we've gotten back in real world experience off of 2 years of ARM AMD. And as you can see, if anything, we've seen that our new architecture is even more reliable than what we've been getting on Intel. So this will get people. This will it will help to establish the credibility of this really big leap with people that don't even understand or care that it's a big leap to begin with. I think that's the smart move.
You need a proof of concept before you do anything else. What about software? There'll be a software compatibility layer, or Rosetta? They'll have to be, right?
I don't think they want to go there.
They don't even care.
I don't. I think they have the ability to, again, inflict a change upon developers.
So they just tell developers, look, we put a switch in Xcode. It's your job to flip it. See ya.
Yeah, I think that, hey, your text editor doesn't work with ARM-based Macs. That's your problem. However, our ARM-based Macs are unstable and slow in certain apps. That's our problem. And we'd rather you have problems than we have problems.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. I think you're right. I think that's a sense. It requires Apple to flex its muscle in the marketplace. And and that's the question, is does Apple have that kind of muscle? Let's take a break, because I know you, Lori Gill, and you, Renee Ritchie, have an iPhone SE. You both did your reviews. I'd like to hear your thoughts. I finally got my Magic Keyboard for the iPad Pro. I know you've been playing with those. We could talk about that. There's lots more still to come. Renee Ritchie from YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. I want to say from something. Do you have a company name, Renee, or...
I don't. Again, it was just, it was simpler. It was easier. It was expeditious this way.
From the eponymous Renee Ritchie.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay. Lori Gill from iMore.com. Andy Iannacco from Boston Public Radio. We're talking Mac and Apple, and more of it's coming in a bit. Our show today brought to you, as always, literally brought to you by CashFly, our content delivery network, CDN. CashFly has been the best CDN in the business since 1999. We've been using it for 14 years, 13 years, since the very earliest days of Twit. And one of the things, there are a number of things I like about CashFly. First of all, it's fast. It's faster than any other form of delivery. It's even faster than other CDNs. So that's fantastic. It's also affordable, about 20% less than other CDNs. And one of the reasons I like the CashFly model is because instead of billing you, instead of having to worry, have I exceeded my limits this month or whatever, because my content's very spiky, the podcast, but I guess probably most content is. We get a lot of downloads on a certain day or whatever. With CashFly, they work with you to spread your usage out throughout the year. So you pay, you know what you're going to pay every month, and you don't ever have to worry about spikes taking you out of one tier into another tier. It really makes it simple. They've just added something I really like. It's a little harder for me to explain this, but I want to talk about 100% cash shield. You know that, of course, a CDN is caching servers all over the world. You also probably know, if you're using a CDN, that one of the things you really want to avoid is a cache miss, because that means now the content that isn't in the cache has to be loaded from your site, from your S3 bucket, whatever, wherever you're storing that, and that means expense to you. So CashFly is introducing something they call 100% cache shield. With this new feature, you're going to benefit from a drastic reduction in data transfer fees with things like Amazon's S3 by increasing your cache hit ratio to 100%. It also means less buffering. Customers want their 4K content to be delivered instantly, right? They're not, every second you buffer is audience lost, whether it's a web page, video, games. You just have to be faster these days. And if your cached items are being evicted for large one-off requests costing you a fortune in data transfer out fees, that's no good. With 100% cache shield and CashFly's guaranteed availability, you can avoid this. It's a next-generation content delivery solution for today and tomorrow. It's a dedicated storage space on CashFly just for you, so you keep your data and content closer to your customers without the traffic from other companies. You don't have to download stuff from other companies. You could buy as much space as you need. Your data will always be fetched from 100% Cache Shield rather than from your origin, which reduces your origin spend by, in many cases, thousands a month. And guarantees no cache misses. It'll also remarkably improve your download speeds. No buffering, guaranteed availability, highest quality of service. You can easily and reliably scale your video streaming to reach global audiences of any size. You get hyper-fast download speeds, low latency. It's a great scalable solution for gaming. That's why all these companies use CashFly. That's why we've used CashFly for so long. If you're a podcaster, your podcast will be delivered quickly and reliably without delays, without timeouts. It's one of those things where I don't know if customers notice it, but it's just it's a quality of life issue for our audience. We don't want you to have to ever worry about, oh, it's taking forever to download the show. We just want, when you want the show, it's there. That's what we get with CashFly. Receive lightning-fast digital download speeds if you're doing large digital files, no matter where your customers are. CacheFly's global throughput performance dominance makes sure any cache misses are delivered 5 times faster than from your origins. They've got the backbone. You need it. Just for you, CacheFly is giving away a complimentary detailed analysis. Send them your current CDN bill, your usage trends. Let CacheFly show you if you're overpaying 20% or more for your CDN. And let them demonstrate what Cache Shield can do for you. Learn more at twit.cachefly.com. Thank you, CacheFly. We deliver petabytes of podcasts, audio and video, all over the world, every single month. CacheFly is doing it all. twit.cachefly.com. Thank you, CacheFly. Thanks to you for supporting us by going to that address and finding out more. twit.cachefly.com. iPhone SE. It's really interesting to start to see people really wowed by this phone. It was a very big seller when it first came out. The new SE is as fast as the current crop of iPhone 11s. It's a really fast chip in an iPhone 8 4.7-inch form factor. It's hysterical to see Android Police, big Android blog, say things like,
the iPhone SE is faster than enough top-of-the-line Android phones, even better. You've got Black, Lori Gill.
That's that silicon.
I love that. That's that silicon. Yeah. You've got white. Nobody product red, huh? I want red.
No, Marquez got the product red.
That's the one I want. So, Lori,
on brand.
What do you think? Is it what
I
you
think
wanted it to be?
This phone is so much better than I expected it to be. I think the last time when it was first announced and we were talking about it and I was making such a big deal about how it's not a 4-inch iPhone, blah, 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 blah. Well, let me eat my words a little bit, because I end up liking this phone so much that I switched my SIM card over to it from my iPhone 11 Pro, meaning I'm trying to go full time with it. I don't know how long that's going to last, but we're going to see. Right now, it's been, you know, since last Thursday, I think, or last Wednesday. So it's been almost a full week that I've been using just the iPhone SE, and I love it. There are some things that I miss from it, some little things that I miss about not having Face ID that makes it just easier to just swipe up the gesture-based stuff. Night mode, I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would. I realized I very rarely actually use night mode on the iPhone 11. I don't miss it that much. It would be nice to have it. But what I have learned is that the computational processing of the iPhone SE at taking photos at night, it's really, really good. It's not as good as night mode, of course. But I went in my garage when it was really, really dark and took these incredibly bright, well-lit pictures in the dark, better than I remember the iPhone 8 ever being. So there's a lot of good computational software going on in the background to make up for things that this iPhone doesn't do. And the size and the weight and the thinness, this wins me. This is it. It's the thinness and the lightness that just win me over big time.
Do you agree with Flossie Carter? It's the iPhone for peasants.
please refer to me called Riff Raff.
can I do a quick rant?
Yes, rant away, Renee Ritchie.
So I was so happy with the iPhone SE reviews, because all across the line, people finally had a little bit of consideration and empathy for mainstream users. Like, usually it's like, oh, this 12-inch MacBook doesn't have as many ports as the Pro. It's not for me, therefore it sucks. But they were actually able to step out of themselves and say, you know, we're Top Gear. We're racing Ferraris all day. But when our family comes to us and says, what car should we get? We're not like, oh, you need the Bentley. No, the Mercedes. We actually say, no, the Camry is really good. The Toyotas last forever. And then there were a couple cranky people, no names, who are like, oh, look, they're reviewing the new iPhone. It's not the iPhone any of them would get, but they're telling other people it's fine. And it was just such a regressive attitude. But this really, like, my family really does want this. My mom is going to wait for a plus version, I think, because she's gotten used to the plus sized iPhones now. But my father, and again, he's not like dumb. He was an IBM engineer for decades. He was like, where's the next home button iPhone? I don't like these other iPhones. And all these people that I know, they're just comfortable with this design. They wanted this, but better. And Apple gave them this, but better. And most of the tech community was gracious enough to actually think about those people and what would be good for them. And they're just a few last people I want to just take by hand and lead them over and just say, it's okay. Not every phone has to be for you. There can be some for your family too.
And yeah, Renee, I think...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Andy. One of the reasons that it helps to have this, the reason that this iPhone got a lot of positive reviews is the price. I think that really blew a lot of people away, that the price of the iPhone SE originally back in 2016 was the same price as this iPhone SE is today, but there's a lot more for that price. You're talking about more storage capacity, the faster processor, the better camera computation. It's amazing that they packed in that much stuff at that price range. I think that is a really positive thing that these reviewers who are always saying, well, you know, I can't believe that iPhone would make a crappy phone like this for this much money. Well, they can't say that with this. They're saying the exact opposite. I can't believe they put this much technology in a phone for this price.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with everything that both of you folks have been saying, which has been very, very positive. So unfortunately, it falls to me to be to be the John Lennon and say that I thought everything that you guys have been thinking that is great. It's great that they didn't skimp on the places where you can't possibly skimp. Not only that, but they didn't give people a cut rate phone. They gave them a fully modern phone. Let's just not forget, however, that they always, this is proof that they always had the ability to deliver a really great phone at this price. It wasn't really an engineering problem. It was something they simply didn't want to do. And I really feel as though it was because the market sort of held their feet to the fire on this. Now that the market has been, the market for really expensive phones has been fairly weak, even when you create a really, really great $1,000 or $1,200 phone. Even $900 phone, that there's so much room to be made, so much opportunity in the sub $500 market. But the fact that Apple is still not willing to do we'll rebadge something old and we'll give you a special color that you can't get on our modern phones. No, they get something really, really good. I also want to say now I'm not going to have much to say because I'm the only one who does. I don't have an iPhone SE.
Neither do I. Also, you and I are in the same.
Exactly, but you also.
I'm not a peasant.
Well, again, we refer to be called riffraff.
Humans.
And also, Leo has the new like Magic keyboard, and I don't. I don't have it either,
Andy. We have a solidarity on Magic.
But I feel as though I need to bring something like to the party. So you guys don't have a 1973 cassette player that looks like R2-D2.
That thing
is so
cute. I love
that in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I might have had one.
That is so cool.
That's when I graduated from high school. I probably wanted that bad.
I wonder if Apple's...
GRQ225 before people ask.
Oh, yes, right.
I wonder if it's less that Apple... like. I wonder if Apple is just like one of those special little cases where their focus ends up being tunnel vision sometimes. And it's really no more complicated than... We paid down the iPhone 5S, now we're making the iPhone SE. We paid down the iPhone 8, now we're making the iPhone SE 2. When we've paid down the iPhone 2020, we'll make the iPhone SE 3. And maybe they don't shift. Like if the market says, shift earlier. Yes, but we haven't paid it down. It's like almost like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. Yes, but we haven't paid it down yet. No, but it would be really great if you put it out a year, but we haven't paid it down yet. And it's just, okay.
Yeah, it's just that simple. To go with what Renee is saying, and Andy, this is me disagreeing with you just a little bit. On the one hand,
I agree with you
that, you know, Apple will hold off, you know, lowering the price of things as much as possible, obviously. But I don't think that the only reason they lowered the price is because of the market. I think they have, like what Renee is saying, they have this phone chassis paid down. They have so much of this phone paid down. They can do this now. It's because this particular casing, this particular model is cheaper to make. They can't do that with an iPhone XR. They can't do that with an iPhone 11 because that's still not paid down yet. So you have to take into consideration things like just the backlog of stuff that they have on the line. And in my own mind, I think of it as when you put out your first 500 vinyl records, it's going to cost you way more than it is to repress those vinyl albums because you already have the plates. So the biggest cost is those plates that you have to have made. But when you do the second run, it's less expensive. So it's the same kind of analogy here, is that Apple isn't necessarily holding off, though they probably are because they're a company. But in this case, I think market was right and timing was right, and the ability to make it that cheap was there. And also, Andy, this is for you. I've got my old Walkman tape.
Oh, wow!
This one is from 1980 something. I don't know exactly what year, but 1980.
You still use it? So. It's right to hand. You must use it still.
Wow. I haven't actually used this in a long time. Okay. So.
I just want to do a dance off to save the galaxy right now. Just a dance off.
We're all preparing all of us for the end of all infrastructure. At one point, we will all be able to find C-sized batteries and type 2 cassettes to get by.
It also is the case that Apple knows there's a market for this. Didn't the original iPhone SE sell very, very well? I think it's no surprise.
Everyone says it didn't. There's this thing been going on for the last month where people are like, oh, the iPhone. It sold better. Like, it outperformed Apple's demand forecasting because they thought people who liked cheap iPhones would buy it. They didn't realize so many people who liked small iPhones would buy it. So they could not keep it in stock. And there's also like, oh, Apple discontinued it after a year. They discontinued the very lowest end, the smallest gigabyte version, after a year. They kept the other one going. So, like, there's all this weird sort of misreporting going on. But as far as I know, it was popular enough that Apple was keeping the SE going. Like,
and the most more popular than the iPhone X was the XR. I think Apple knows people. It's not just small. People want less expensive. They know that.
Yeah.
And there's also a massive market and a very profitable market. Because there's people like me who are not peasants who will spend ungodly.
Riff-rap. That's what I really like about...
You try to put us down. You are the man. I don't mean that in a positive
that's
way.
That's what I really like about Apple's current strategy, though, is that because they're getting very aggressive about putting in new technologies, which is amping up the price, because Apple's unwilling to change their margin structure. And there's a whole other conversation about their margin structure. But they're putting more expensive parts in, so the higher-end stuff is getting more expensive, especially with the edge-to-edge designs, and then all these things.
And they're groundbreaking products. They're great products.
But they've been putting in the lower end ones. Like the iPad Pro was more expensive in 2018, but then they introduced the 329. The Apple Watch Series 5, more expensive. Then they introduced the 199 one. iPhones got more expensive, and now $499. And I think that sort of averages, like people hate feeling like they're getting less than. Like, I think the XR would have done better if it didn't feel like, oh, I couldn't afford a XS. But with the 11, they flipped that. And now the 11 Pros, oh, those are for snooty pros.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are for those people. But I have the 11.
Turns out there's more riffraff like than there is us.
I don't have an old iPhone 8. I have a new iPhone SE. And that simple psychological change seems to really make people feel better and then buy more.
You want your breath taken away. Price an iPad Pro 12.9 inch with the Magic Keyboard.
Yeah.
Suddenly, this thing not only weighs more than my MacBook Air,
Intel Mac sounds cheap.
Yes.
An Intel Mac sounds cheap.
But it is very... Okay, so you don't have it, Renee, and Andy, you don't have it. Lori,
I think mine comes tomorrow.
You got the Logitech or the Bridge.
No. I have the Magic Keyboard.
What do you think?
I wrote a review yesterday, if anybody wants to check it out. I'm not going to say I'm disappointed in it. That's not the case. I think I had very high expectations that Apple was going to solve the problem of lap usage with the keyboard and an iPad. And frankly, they didn't solve it. It to me, I have the same issues with wobbliness and, it tips a little bit if I'm not at the right angle. I have to have my knees at a 90-degree angle.
You're lapping for the iPad. You're putting it in your lap.
Yeah. Because that's what most people are going to do. Like, there's going to be some people who are going to sit there at their desktop the whole time. But most people are going to be sitting there watching TV with their iPads on their lap. And that's what I'm trying to appeal to is the people who are like me, who just want to sit there and kind of type away while they're just lounging around.
So
and
you have the 11-inch.
I do.
12.9. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, so you feel like. Well, see, I got mine an hour ago, so I don't have no reason.
Do me a favor. One of the things that you should do,
put it in my lap.
Sit on the couch and keep it on your lap, and don't don't have your legs at a 90 degree angle and see what happens.
I often sit with my legs crossed like this. So it works. Uh-huh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. But and it didn't solve for that problem. So yeah. I was a little bit not, and again, it's not that I'm disappointed. I think it's great. And I think they did successfully make as much compromise as possible. The way it's angled makes it a very good idea for its ability to try to compromise with that balance and the fact that it's a little top heavy. It's a very creative idea and a creative way to do it. But for that price, it didn't solve that problem for me, which means they overcomplicated it and still didn't fix it. So that's where I'm at with that.
I feel like if I'm going to use that in my lap, I'm going to take it off anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use it that way. I'm going to use it and be swiping and touching. This is to me a laptop replacement more than anything
else. It's a dock. I think that's the thing that some people missed. Like there was a bunch of different reviews on it, and some were like, "I don't get it. It's heavier than the other keyboard case." But when you watch that Craig Federighi video, he comes over, slaps it down. When he's finished, he picks it up, walks away with the tablet. It looked very clearly intentionally like a dock more than like a carrying case to me.
That's
and
a good point.
It's really easy to just pop off. It's really easy to pop off and just hold it in your lap like a tablet. Absolutely.
Actually, it is.
That's the best part about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It is a dock in that sense. It comes right off. Yeah. And yet it's very solidly attached to it. I feel like if you're on a table, Lori, and maybe this.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I did seem to be the people who were using the 11-inch liked it less than the people who were using the 12.9-inch. So it might be it's better suited to a larger iPad. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be because it might make – because, you know, 11-inch – an 11-inch laptop is too small. It's just – in general, nobody makes 11-inch laptop because they're
not
small.
Not even Apple anymore.
7.9-inch Pro, give it to me now. No, but I want it.
I do. I do have to say that once you create this dock with an integrated keyboard, you really are asking people to think of this as a laptop configuration. So I don't necessarily disagree, but I think that a lot of people are going to be I think that they at minimum should do some education on what people should expect about the stability of this configuration.
Yeah, I mean, I sit on my computer, it's not going to fall over on the desk.
It's pretty straight.
Oh, no.
I use my laptop on my lap, sitting on my lap. I don't only use my laptop on a desk. I sit in front of the television on my couch with
it. You can do that.
And so, you know, absolutely, the stability there is there, and it's fantastic when you're at a desk. But again, so are 100 other keyboards that are half that price. And that's what I was thinking of is that.
Oh, no, I agree with you. Yes.
At that price, I wanted this to be a miracle. I wanted it to make it wasn't. So to me, it's just as good as, and frankly, a little bit better than every other keyboard case out there. Because the Magic Keyboard keys, oh my gosh, it feels so good. Yeah. But for that price, I think that I expected more from it. That's where I'm at with it.
Well, and this relates back to the iPhone SE conversation, which is that Apple clearly is willing to say price is no object. What's the best thing we can do? And then understands that that's still price is definitely an object for most people. So what can we do for a lower price? I wonder if they'll make a lower price, you know, once they...
I think they outsourced to Logitech for that.
That's probably what it is, huh? The third party.
They use Logitech and Belkin and a couple other people to sort of make the stuff that they don't have the bandwidth to make at any given time, but really would like for launch.
For me, and again, I just got it, so I can't judge it. But I think this is a very interesting thing. It's an interesting form factor to take an iPad and turn it into a laptop.
It's a cool look.
It's an interesting idea to me. An idea that I want to explore a little bit more because it may be this is the laptop I actually want.
Myself and some of my coworkers at iMore, Brian Wolf and Christine Chan and Joe Keller, we have made a pact. We are working exclusively on our iPads for 1 week straight. And Brian is actually going to do it for a month straight because he's going to write the full article about it. And give our feedback on the things we thought were great and the pain points that we had, because when we start thinking about, can you use a laptop, or can you use an iPad as a laptop? Where we get stuck is what we're used to. And if we could let go of the familiarity of a laptop, maybe an iPad could be a laptop replacement. And the one way to do that is to immerse yourself in that experience and not use anything else. So right now I'm on my iMac because I got permission for this week to be able to use my iMac just to podcast. But everything else that I've been doing has been exclusively on the iPad. And there are some definite pain points. But what I'm realizing is that I'm quickly learning how to overcome those and compensate for the shortcomings of, for example, not being able to have multiple windows just kind of open and peppered all over my home screen. So yeah, I think the key though is you have to put the lock on your Mac to right. see whether or not this legitimately is something you could do. Cause it's going to be hard. You're going to say, this sucks. I don't want to do this. There's so many things missing. But once you get used to it, I wonder if maybe we could change our minds on that.
The gestures are very natural.
I have like a concern.
Intuitive. Yes, Renee.
So my concern is this, like, I don't ever want to force the iPad to be my laptop. I want it to be an iPad. And I think that excitement Steve Jobs had about introducing the iPad was so vital, so important. And I still remember the iPad 2. All of my high school teachers were there buying them, people for whom traditional computers were always so alienating and unapproachable. And and for a long time, Apple resisted making the iPad into more of a traditional computer. But nerds are so loud. We're so vicious. We're on Twitter all the time. Where's our file system? Where's our this? And I understand that because, again, we want every product to be for us. And I use the iPad. I use it as an iPad. I draw on it all the time. I write. I do all these things on it. But I use my Mac for very Mackety Mac things, like multi-window things, Final Cut Pro, podcasting, where I need to use things like Rogue Amoeba software for routing audio in all sorts of new and wonderful ways. I have a very West Wing feeling about this, where I want to let the iPad be the iPad, let it evolve to be more, but I don't ever want it to be sort of constrained by what we think a Mac and what traditional computer users think should be their domain.
That's true. The only note I'd add is that Apple is to be applauded for making really amazing $329 iPads, but they also make $1,000 iPads that cost more than a mid-range Windows notebook. On that basis, it's not necessarily inappropriate for someone who spent that amount of money to say, well, why can't I use a mouse with this? Boy, I really, really would love to have an iPad. I'd love to have an iPad so much more than a Windows notebook. But the thing is, this one, when I need to be productive, it doesn't let me be productive.
And no, so I think that's totally fair. I just think it's not like I would like a You're Mac, right. it's, but, it's not but the iPad is right. shinier and newer, right. and damn it, right. it should be a Mac. Like, I think like there's a lot of use cases where I think it will one day be more profound than that. And I like that Apple takes their time. It's not like they're going, we're going to take the Mac mouse model and just superimpose it on the iPad, which they didn't do. The pointer system is completely different. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse. But I like that they're investigating new ways. They're not just carrying over the baggage of the previous type of computer. They're trying new things. I just want to make sure that, you know, if you really do prefer a Mac, it is okay to use a Mac.
Yeah.
And Renee, I think there's kind of the world has changed. So there was a time where, first of all, nobody had a computer in their own home. And when the people did get them in their own home, that was crazy. And then there was a time where everyone had a computer in their own home and they had two and they had three and then they had a couple of laptops. So computers were everywhere and they were ubiquitous. And then tablets came out and now we're stuck in this thing, which Renee, on the one hand, I agree with you. We're a bunch of nerds who say, I want my computer. But there are so many people in this world who never needed a computer. They just fell for the marketing scheme. And I think what needs to happen now is that we need to start recognizing that most people don't need a computer. They need something they can browse the internet with, check their emails with, the little simple things they do at home. And then the other group of us, the nerds, we get our Macs, we get our Windows computers. It doesn't have to be both. We can have two separate things. We can have Macs and we can have iPads that are very close to the abilities that a Mac can do, but are also separate from that.
I'm so glad to hear you say this because I agree with – I've been on this campaign, frankly, especially on the radio show, because people just go, oh, I need a Windows computer. No, you don't. You probably yes. don't even want a Mac. You need an iPad or you need a Chromebook. The only, yes. I mean, I would, without hesitation, recommend this to anybody who says, well, I need a computer. I'm holding up the 12.9-inch iMac and the keyboard. The only problem is the price, because the two of these together start at $1,400 and up. And that's a little hard to tell people that, you know. That's why they probably will end up getting a Chromebook instead. But honestly, I completely agree with you, Lori. The days when you had to buy a general-purpose operating system are long gone, and most people should not. They just shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is an excellent – boy, this is everything. I can't think of anything – I mean, this is so much more than a Chromebook. I mean, it's not just a browser. Yeah. I've got all these great apps. I could do my photography with this. This is a really nice system. It's just a very
you have ease of use and native performance.
It's incredible. I just wish it weren't so pricey. Is the only drawback.
Although, like, again, you can get the 329. It is really good. Like, I use it all the time for a ton of stuff. And some of the keyboards for those are they're not like this. I'm sure they'll get better now that trackpad support is out. But boy, when a really good trackpad keyboard comes out for that 329 one, that's going to be a killer combo.
Mm-hmm.
Logitech's going to make that. They're making one now for the Air. Are they going to make it for the less expensive? Because
I'm sure it'll be competitive.
It'll have to be Bluetooth because there's no smart keyboard connector on that 329.
Same with the Air and the Mini, though. They don't have smart connectors either.
So they're just doing Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great observation. I've been using my iPad Mini has reached end of life. It was the first model that had Touch ID, and with the latest update, it really is just too slow for even just like the web browsing and the casual use that I need, like a really really tiny computer for. And right now, I'm contemplating getting a 7.9 to fill that role. It's bigger, but it will be able to do much more than that thing will do. And the fact that it now has trackpad support means that for $329, I can have what is for me a really important part of my arsenal, which is the machine that I need to have with me because I need to just do this one thing, but it does involve real work for 20 minutes, but it's not worth taking an entire machine in with me. And the fact that Apple has this kind of diversity across of its product line is just wonderful.
Yeah, lately I have really been recommending the 329 iPad. I think that's a great choice.
Yeah.
And what is the best part? It's like about $150 extra. So now you're staying $500 for what is easily a much better computer from 99% of the people in the world. Yeah.
Yes.
Easily.
With the huge software library.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we were saying, go ahead.
Just to clarify, the Logitech Combo Touch, which is the one that we've been talking about, it does have a smart connector. It uses smart connection, and it is available for the iPad Air 3rd generation and the iPad Pro Touch 10.5 and for the 7th generation iPad. So it does support the 329 iPad, and it's only $150.
Because there is no smart connector at all on that.
Yeah.
So it's just Bluetooth.
It's probably smart connector for the iPad Pro 10.5 inch.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little confusing. Apple needs to fix that, by the way. Maybe they can't do it for $329, but I bet they could.
It'll filter down. Like, the next one will have one more piece. Like, it got the pencil, then it got the keyboard. Like, they'll just keep filtering those things down.
I think Face ID is so great on this Pro.
Oh, no, the Air does have the smart connector because it's the old Pro. It's the old generation smart connector. It's not the current one. It's the...
Yeah, it's only the cheapest iPad that doesn't support
it. It's the 329 iPad.
Yeah,
that's the one. Well,
the 329 has Pencil now, and now it's got the bigger screen.
That's
pretty
good.
Those things will keep adding to it.
Yeah, and it has a fingerprint reader. And I mean, I honestly think that I stand by my recommendation. It's hard. A lot of people get mad at me when I say you'd be crazy to buy Windows. Why are you buying Windows?
Well, it's just the overhead. Like, every time we all have this, like, the friend of your parents. It's not your parents. Your parents you can handle, but it's your parents' neighbors who find out that that your parent has someone in the family who knows tech, and they bought a PC, and it's like it's riddled with viruses, and it's like it's barely connecting to the internet. They don't know what to do with it, and it's just so much work. And then you have the awkward discussion about how much tech support you can give your parents' neighbors, and it's just no good for anybody. iPad is so much simpler.
Well, and I'm a sitting duck on the radio show. I get all those calls. I get your parents' neighbors. calls and it just I mean I can't tell somebody you know, I mean, I had a lovely older woman call me who has a Windows 7 machine. She called and said, can you call Microsoft and tell them to keep Windows 7 around? I can't afford to I can't use Windows 10 and I can't afford a new machine. And just during COVID, could you just tell them to do that? I said, I wish I had that kind of clout, but I don't. And even if I did, I don't think they would even consider it. And I just feel bad for this woman who probably, you know, bought a Windows machine that's 10 years old at least when everybody was buying Windows. And that's what they had at work. And that's what everybody uses. And so that's what you get when I'm buying a computer. Oh, yeah. It means you're getting a Dell.
But it's a bad choice for most people. The most important consideration is to always abstract your decisions. I think just in life in general, not just when buying a computer, but particularly when buying a computer, you don't think I need to buy a new iPhone or I need to buy a new Windows notebook. You say I need a device that will do these following things for me. And that's when you realize that in the 5 or 10 years since you last bought an item of this kind, there is something else that does that job much, much better. And it might even be a phone.
I've been saying that for 20 years. You start with what you want to do, not with what you want to buy.
Exactly. And I wouldn't agree with you'd be nuts to buy a Windows machine, because some people, they really do need something that can be they really do need the Toyota Corolla. They really do need something that is very, very conventional, that a lot of what they do has been it's not so much 80% of what they need to do that can be handled by just about anything. It's the 10 to 20% that comes to, oh, well, they sent me a PDF file that I now need to open and sign and then print out and then mail back to them or whatever.
Which you can do on an iPad.
Okay. If you can do it electronically, B, if you can There are a lot of steps involved. I chose a bad example, but what I'm saying is that there's a reason why notebooks sell extremely well. Mm-hmm. And number one reason is definitely enterprise purchasing. But the number two reason is why it does everything that a lot of people need to do. It has a common sort of set of functions and functionality that everyone's familiar with. So that's the only thing I'm disagreeing with is that you'd be nuts to buy a Windows notebook or a notebook in general. But I agree 100% that these are the conversations that I think we all have. And so many times where I'm trying to sort of nudge somebody into getting an iPad or nudge somebody into saying that it sounds like since you spend almost all of your time on your phone, I mean, you even do your banking on your phone now. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you just told me that you find it so much easier to do your banking now that you don't have to sit in front of papers or in front of a screen. You just do it like because you got an alert on your phone and it got into doing 12 minutes of making sure that this gets paid here, making sure that this goes into the retirement fund. Maybe you just need to get. Maybe you should replace your 8-year-old phone with one that doesn't annoy you quite so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Andy, you're exactly right. It's what it comes down to is yes, there are a certain group of people, certain types of people who do need an actual desktop computer, but then everybody else at this point, just like you're saying, they might even only need a phone. They might not even need a tablet. There's a lot of people out there who don't need the kind of technology that we have on our desks.
And by the way, the people who need Windows know enough not to listen to me say don't buy Windows. They know what they want to do.
They have existing software, right?
Yeah,
I want to run AutoCAD.
Okay, fine. Or they want to play Crysis or whatever they want to play a game. That's the responsibility you take. I need Windows. Fine. You're your IT department. Period. End of sentence.
Yeah.
Windows is designed to be used. Where
I'm all up
an
in this registry,
department.
Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Windows has gotten much better, but yeah, that used to be. I would open the conversation by saying, "I'd be happy to help you. I don't want to prejudice your decision. I just want you to extract information from my ground rules that I will guide you towards whatever the best machine is. But if you wind up buying a Mac, I will give you lifetime technical support. If you buy Windows, you get to play that card 3 times.
Well, get ready for some heresy because I also tell them don't buy a Mac. While the Mac is better, it's not enough better. You don't need a general purpose operating system.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm saying my mom had computers our entire lives. We had an Apple II Plus when I was a kid. We had DOS boxes, Windows boxes. She's had Macs. I gave her an iMac a while ago. The best computer she's ever used, she's on it all the time, is her iPad. She calls it her computer. And it's just and again, she's super smart. She was a university lecturer, by no means, and married for years to an IBM engineer. And it's the first computer that didn't make her feel like, dumb or weird using it. It just let her do what she wanted. And that's such an empowering feeling.
It does require a
change. And that's also something most people actually want. They just feel they just don't know it. they drink. We all drink the Kool-Aid in terms of needing a desktop computer. Right. We don't need them. Most of us don't need them.
I'll just say, if you like to edit batch files, you should get a Windows machine. Actually, I have a great caller who calls in from time to time who is former NASA engineer. She writes COBOL software, and she should have Windows. She should have whatever she wants, whatever you want, you should have. She was saying, should I install Linux on my Windows machine? I said, yeah, absolutely you should.
If you're a mechanic, that's fine.
Right.
If you're a race car driver, that's fine. If you just need something to drive around the neighborhood, different choice.
And it's a shame, unfortunately, people don't want to kind of spend a lot of energy thinking about this. And those are exactly the people who should be buying an iPad, by the way. But instead, their default is, well, everybody has Windows. So I'm just, that's what I see
at Costco.
I
went to Best Buy. The Geek Squad said this compact was on sale.
Exactly. Yeah. And the people who don't want to think a lot about it, that's the last person who should buy Windows. The last Patch Tuesday, a week ago, 113 flaws were fixed on Windows. 113 on Windows 10. It's out of control. It's an operating system that's been around for so long, it's just a mess. Now, to be fair, there is a 0 day that's affecting iOS mail right now. Apple says there's a debate. ZecOps, which is a company that protects high-end users, maybe Fortune 500 executives, spies, government officials, they say that they've found a number of their customers who have been infiltrated with a 0 day they believe is out in the wild involving Apple Mail. Apple responded saying, we don't think there's a problem out there. We can't find anybody who's been affected by this. So there's a little debate.
So they said that. So as far as I can remember, and it's been a little while, so I might have the details fuzzy. He named several exploits, and Apple looked into it because it's literally their job to look into these things. And they found the errors in the code, and they fixed the errors in the code, but they didn't see how those could be exploited.
Right.
And then I talked to a bunch of people, all the people you normally talk to, and I looked at what Will Safik said and Patrick Wardell said, and just everybody in the industry. And what it came down to for me is it looks like these were issues. They weren't issues where anyone had a complete, or at least no one could, and an absence of evidence is not evidence of that whole thing being understood. This could be part of an exploit chain. You would need the exploit chain to go with it. There was no evidence of it being used as part of an exploit chain, and it's fixed. And some companies have a more sensational way of disclosing vulnerabilities than others. So I think he got a lot of attention for this, which is probably what he wanted. And Apple got to fix the bugs, which is definitely what I wanted.
Right.
So the argument is whether this was in the wild, seriously affecting people right now, or woo, we're glad we found this and it's fixed. And I think it leans more towards the woof, we're glad we found this and it's fixed.
Well, what the missing piece might be, and ZecOps even said the emails that were sent are gone because whoever got into the phone immediately deleted them, and that's standard operating procedure. They claimed that their customers who were victims were individuals from a Fortune 500 organization in North America, an executive from a telephone carrier in Japan.
Like spear phishing, right?
A journalist. Yeah, I would guess, it's purely a guess, we'll have to ask Steve Gibson, but these are nation-state actors targeting specific people, and there is a missing piece to the exploit chain that Apple doesn't know about. There are a number of vulnerabilities, and that's how it usually works.
He also said he wouldn't give them everything, which is understandable, but also less than optimal.
And he may not have had everything. Also, I don't know.
Yeah.
So Apple said, we conclude these issues do not pose an immediate risk to our users. However, we are going to patch. There are three issues in mail, but they were insufficient to control the iPhone or the iPad. And we have found no evidence they were used against customers. That no evidence doesn't mean it wasn't. I believe ZecOps probably isn't making this up. They were real vulnerabilities.
It's a weird reputation. That's the only thing is that if it was like Google, and even Google's day zero, pushed back a little bit on it too. I forget which one of them, but if it was them, I'd believe it 100% because they're just methodical about it. he's been a little bit more, I don't know what the right word is for it, but I just like, you're going to have to prove it was my initial
Okay, good. And yes.
But fix it, of course, yes.
It's going to be fixed. Those three will be fixed. And this is often the case. I have to say, it doesn't mean you're going to be attacked. Nation states have vast resources and very talented hackers and collect these 0 days, often paying millions of dollars for them, specifically to use against targeted individuals. They're not being used by hackers in mass attacks. So unless you're working for a three-letter agency in McLean, Virginia, or, you know, you're a executive of a big company, I wouldn't worry about it too much. And if you are, you probably have security working for you to protect you anyway. I hope you do. There is one thing that might affect you. I think it hit me Friday night. All of a sudden, my phone froze up and then rebooted. I didn't see any messages with the Italian flag in it. But this is not. I don't know if it's the same bug that hit before. Remember, there was a you could carefully craft a message that would crash.
But it's not just one bug. There are constant errors in Unicode parsing across a myriad of systems. For some reason, the Unicode parsing system was built in such a way that if you ever find anything that it is not prepared for, it just falls down and cries.
Yeah.
And it's happened over and over and over again.
Steve Gibson has multiple times said it's hard to interpreters are hard. And that's what it is. This parsing system is an interpreter, and you can't. You're supposed to sanitize your inputs and make sure you don't misinterpret what you receive.
Yeah.
But it's a challenging thing to do. This bug, which includes an Italian flag emoji and characters in the Sindhi language, affects iPhones, iPads, Macs, even Apple Watches. When you get a notification with that text in it, your device. And this is exactly what happened. Sometimes it will crash. Other times it completely stops responding to touch input. I had both.
So I had a weird issue where Tweetbot on Mac would just crash on launch. And eventually it would just crash everything on launch. I had to reboot. So I stopped using it. And like today it's fine again. But for 3 days I couldn't use it. And Twitter on Twitter.com, when I went to Twitter.com to try to use Twitter on the Mac – I got Andy's last mention to me and then nothing else for 2 days. So like I was happy because Andy was top of Twitter for me for like 2 days, which is great. But I was I had to use Tweetbot on my iPhone, and that was the only way I could use Twitter for 2 days.
So the way this works, they're all using Apple's renderer, which is on all these platforms, but it could be in other messaging apps, it could be on Twitter. It doesn't have to be through an Apple product. Everybody uses the renderer built into Apple, the Unicode renderer. And this is not the first time. So it's just a hard problem, and which is not to let Apple off the hook, but these things happen from time to time. The really thing that's kind of amazing, I wonder what kind of brute force process people were using to try to find these Unicode strings. They're not doing it by hand. I can't imagine they're doing it by hand.
It's been Cyrillic. It's been Arabic. Yeah. It's been all sorts of different characters.
It's almost always those a non-Western character set. It's something using the high end of the Unicode space probably. Oh, by the way, the latest, you can leave out the Italian flag. It's the Sindhi characters here. If you want to see it, this is a tweet from Everything Apple Pro of the crash. Oh, can't play it on my Linux box, so never mind.
It's protecting you, Leo.
It is. I don't want you to experience it. All right. So you don't see that message now, and that's why Tweetbot works. Maybe Twitter went through their database and deleted all occurrences of it. I never saw a message like that on my phone. So maybe it's just a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, I bring that up just to show I'm not biased against Windows. All computers break.
They're all terrible.
They
need to get better.
5 years, baby. It's been five years. We've had the Apple Watch. Gosh, it seems longer.
Seems forever.
Yeah, I guess it does seem like it does seem like we've had it around for, it's so part of our lives now that it seems like, it's always been there.
Yeah.
It's such a big deal that 20 or 30 years from now, if there are movies that are set in this period, the set designer and the costume designer are going to say, okay, about 20% of these people need to be wearing Apple Watches.
Yeah. Because AirPods, those weird little, can you find those weird little external communicators? Remember when they had external communicators? They weren't built into our ears. Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you find some of those? Little stems. Got to have stems.
Think about what the Apple Watch was marketed to us as and what we thought of it as 5 years ago. It was this sort of like, it was a way to put down your iPhone but still stay connected. It was all about notifications.
It was
and
a sidecar.
Awkward apps.
It was a sidecar, right?
And
it was
remember Heartbeats and set and because I was rewatching. I rewatched the entire event, like the both the September pre-introduction and the March It's Time to Go one. And they spent so much time showing like the Heartbeats and the little sketches that disappear into ethereal things that just don't even exist anymore.
There's so many that is such a textbook presentation that I don't think there's ever been a piece of technology that was launched so badly but recovered so dramatically.
Yeah.
You're also overlooking two things: the demo of, and I got a text message from my kid saying they can't get into the garage, and here I am watching opening the garage via my watch while watching live video of the garage door opening. I say, wow, thank you. You have definitely solved a problem that I really, really have, because I wish I could watch the garage door opening on my watch. And then, but it also included the single stupidest product Apple has ever made, or I hope ever will make. I would actually nominate it as the stupidest tech product ever made by a large manufacturer.
Wait a minute. Let me think. What could this be? Don't say.
My
dog have three, because four of them would be ungracious.
It's an exercise in a riddle for us all. All right,
The $12,000 solid gold.
There you go. There you go. Okay, I'll give that to you.
Apple hasn't lost touch with the consumer with that product.
Was it 12? I think it was even more than that, wasn't it?
It was 18 karat gold, and it started at that. It went up.
Yep. That was the cheap one. That was the one with a factory radio and no air conditioning.
It was solid gold.
And remember that Apple like created a whole new section of the store with security and a special concierge service for it. And the box was great. I'm not complaining about the box. If you offered me a box, I would probably pay okay money for it, because it was a lovely box.
Oh, but you want a band with that? That'll be $7,000 extra.
Yeah, it's like,
you know what though, their today version of this, of the luxury version of the Apple Watch, the ceramic, I'd buy that. It
titanium
is
too.
Really,
I have the
good
titanium.
Looking.
I bought the titanium.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why, because honestly, I'm going to get another one the minute the new one comes out. So it's silly.
Every year I say I'm buying the Nike. The Nike is the absolute best value. And then they're like, oh, have you seen titanium? I know next year it'll be like tungsten. It weighs 13 pounds, but it's the same size. It's tungsten. And I'll be like, yes, arm curls. It'll be great.
The ceramic is beautiful, Lori. You're absolutely right. It's gorgeous.
It's so pretty.
And I think that the Apple Watch Edition as a concept was a good idea, because it is a watch.
It's a $12,000 one.
and especially that there's nothing about this design that demands it be made out of gold. There's nothing of it. Was just, hey, I know it's not as simple as, oh, well, we were pouring aluminum into this mold. We decided just for giggles, we'll pour some gold. I know it's a lot more complicated than that. I think they actually made a big deal of, it's not just gold. It's we sampled a million different versions of gold to choose this version of gold. And it's like, really? This is really what you're spending your time on?
It's like, who here actually Johnny saw the bored. Gold one with their own eyes?
Not me.
Andy saw Caldwell wearing two of them on her wrist at the same time, surrounded by Apple people.
No.
Yeah, she slapped both of them on at the table. That was our Serenity.
Do we know anybody who owns one? No.
I do.
You do?
You do?
I do.
Yeah. You seem embarrassed that you know someone.
No, you have to understand. So, like, at launch day, and I've told the story before, Jim Dalrymple and I went to the Palo Alto Apple store, and it was like a bonanza like you expect. But then afterwards, we went to the coffee shop, and we were sitting there, and there were these Silicon Valley nerds going, oh, which of the Apple Watch gold watches are you going to get? Oh, I think I'm going to get this one. And it's that same conversation we had at the beginning of the show, where certain people have enough zeros in their bank accounts that none of this, like, they buy $25,000 plane seats. You know, they buy $17,000 dresses they wear once. They stay a minimum 6-star. It's a different world. And I'm sure they enjoyed them for the year that they had them. And I'm sure they're just as happy with their Nike version now.
I'm going to guess that 90% of the people who had them were given them by Apple, like Beyonce. Beyonce and others to wear them.
I think they were Emirates sales. I heard that a large portion of them were in places like the Abu Dhabi and the Dubai Apple stores.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a multi-billionaire, you know, an $18,000 watch, it's like a $5 watch for you and me. It's nothing.
Yeah, that's not a good look for Apple, is it?
Oh, it's terrible.
But also, you shouldn't overlook that at that media event, there were so many high-ranking people from the fashion world there. Yeah. And I'm not talking about Instagram influencers. I'm talking about, like, I think Anna Wintour was there, like leaders of like so many different design houses.
It was on the cover of Vogue, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Yep. So
when we were standing, the PR was so different too, because I've been to several Apple events now, but there was a bunch of people dressed like you would see dressed on reality shows, like just completely like things coming out of everywhere going, oh, this feels like a fashion event, doesn't it? It feels like a fashion event. Ooh.
Was that a bad idea? Was that really a bad idea? Or maybe it was a good idea. Maybe they were really got a lot of attention because of it.
No, that was definitely a good idea, because their whole idea was to they put so much into making this not look like a gadget watch. If there was one imperative of this launch, it was to not, hey, it's got Nixie tubes on it. It's the size of a can of tuna, but it's got Wi-Fi on it. I mean, they have to make the point that we know how to design something that people are going to want to put on their wrists, because this is not going to be just a gadget that they use for productivity. This is going to be part of the style statement that they make, just like I apparently made a style statement by putting on a sweater vest over a t-shirt today. You know, but they really did have to make that statement. And they put, this is why it was one of the worst launches from the point of view of, I think it was very clear that Apple didn't know who was going to buy this. They also didn't have a lot of it really, really working, I think, at that time. So it really put them on their back foot there. But they knew that if we get the hardware right, you can always put new electrons in there. We can't just push out an update to the style of this thing. And they got the style so right that no one is complaining that, oh gosh, it's so boring. It's 5 years and we haven't seen a new case design. It's like, no, you let us have really, really cool different straps. Let me upgrade from the aluminum one that I could afford 5 years ago to the stainless steel one I can afford now. We're good. Just give me custom watch faces and then we'll be perfect.
I want the next iPhone to be platform agnostic. I think that right now it's become a literal lifesaver.
The only
thing that they should do next is make it so that anybody can have their life saved with an Apple Watch. I think that's the next step that they should do.
That's never going to happen. I feel like
I know.
Same reason we're not going to see iMessages on Android. Apple doesn't even know Android.
I think there's a way. So I think there's a way, because the iPhone originally was tethered to iTunes and then it went free with iCloud. And the iPhone had capabilities beyond an Apple Watch. Like, I think they've been slowly adding things to it. Like, they added LTE and they've added an onboard app store. What I think Apple can have some of their cake and eat it too if they remove the last tether. Like, you no longer have to have an iPhone. You can just buy an Apple Watch. But if you have an iPhone, wow, is it easier to manage all these things? Because we're not making apps for Android. Like, no, you
That's
can have an Apple
point.
Watch and it'll sync the way any Android watch syncs. But if you want, like, our Apple Watch app and our activities app and all these things that show you your, like, it's no extra features, but it's, you get to see your trophies in big phone print.
They wouldn't even have to mention Android. They wouldn't even have to mention it.
No joke. I'm an Android phone user, but I was wearing an Apple Watch daily for a long, long time. And when I stopped wearing it, it wasn't because of incompatibilities with Android. It was just that I fell out of that. I became more of a fan of the, I pick up this watch every day for the next 5 years without ever having to recharge it. That was the only thing about it. If Apple made the Apple Watch, which is now can connect to the internet all by itself via Wi-Fi, it now has its own version of the App Store. If all it came with was the basic app that you would get with an Android Wear watch, to simply say, here's how to put it, here's how to establish it on your Wi-Fi network, and here's a to-do list or whatever, they would absolutely run the table on Android, because I did buy last week a Fossil Android Wear watch. And that's the only reason why I got it was because they're clearing out the Generation 4 model. Now that there's the Generation 5, I got the $275 watch I got for like $100, $110. For that amount of money, okay, I will buy an Android Wear watch that lets me do Google Pay and has GPS. Great. And mostly buying it as a fitness watch. If you were to – I would have 100% – paid $300 for a new Apple Watch instead of that, if I could have gotten the same sort of communication, basic fitness watch level. I'm talking about $100 fitness watch communication with a phone. If that were possible, there is no chance I would have even been aware of what's going on in Wear OS. And you're talking to a fan of Android here. It's just, it's not competing with anything that costs more than $150 out there. It just isn't. So Apple would just run the table if they made this thing compatible.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you just made me think of something. Apple Pay compatibility on Apple Watch. So for people who so you, who doesn't have Apple Pay set up on a phone, can use Apple Pay, because that, you know, Apple makes money off of that. They want people to be using Apple Pay. So if they could somehow make it so you could set up Apple Pay just on your Apple Watch and use your bank card to make purchases, but you're doing it on your Apple Watch, I think that would be a big deal to be able to add that.
If they could configure it via the web, that would be good enough, I think. Also, what also bums me out is that I have iPads. I've got multiple iPads. You're running iOS on both of these devices. You're saying that I don't get to be part of the club even though I have an iPad? Come on, please.
Yeah, that
Look,
is
here's
weird,
the stack of them. I've got 5 iPads here. Yeah. Let me set it up with an iPad, and then I'll never connect to it ever again.
So when the Apple Watch first came out, I was skeptical. It didn't really seem like it made a lot of sense. It seemed like an expensive accessory for your iPhone.
It was early. Like everything else, they waited a decade of PowerPC. They waited a decade of smartphones. Yeah. They looked at every problem that existed, and they figured, like, we hate our phones. How can we make a good one? We hate these tablets. I can't believe that my wife's stupid friend at Microsoft thinks they can make a better tablet than me. Like, there was, like, real motivators there. With the Apple Watch, there was Pebble and very little else at the time. And so Apple found itself in an unusual position where they were making a lot of the mistakes in public and figuring out the problems as they went. And I was sort of excited to do that with them. But when you look at like 2, 3, 4 years later, that's when Apple would have released the phone or the tablet. And it had sort of that level of polish by the time you get to series 3, series 4.
One of the things somebody in the chat room said, all right, give me 3 reasons why I should buy an Apple Watch. And one of the reasons it's hard to do that is it seems to have a different reason for every user has a different reason wearing it, right? There's different purposes for it.
It's that great Andy Anatko metaphor where it's like it's a dollar's worth of this and a dollar's worth of that. And at the end of the day, like it's worth it to you.
I would argue that there is one single feature that I would like some people to switch over from Android for. It's that big of a deal, which is fall detection and ECG monitoring. I think Health. Apple does this amazing job of this. And I've read so many articles of people who young athletes that they didn't even feel like there was anything wrong with them, but their Apple Watch is suddenly telling them, we're noticing that there's something weird about your heart. Maybe you should talk to your doctor. And that stopped them from having an early heart attack. People who have fallen off the edge of cliffs out in the middle of nowhere, and their Apple Watch automatically called 911, and they were rescued and saved and didn't starve to death out in the wilderness. These, to me, are like, that's the feature. That's the single feature that I think is why people should buy an Apple Watch, because Android Wear devices do have ECG monitoring, but as far as I know, they don't have the same mechanism for determining what it means when your heart rate is not doing what it's supposed to do. And I don't think there's any Android Wear device that has fall detection, not that I know of. So that to me is the reason to get an Apple Watch.
Even the best Android Wear watches, they have sensors, but they don't have features, if that makes sense. There's nothing that's that kind of a package. And once Apple figures out how to do O2 saturation sensing through an Apple Watch, that will then be the, oh, man, why are you not letting this be available to everybody?
I mean, especially in the age of COVID, if we had oxygen and if we had temperature on this, I don't know if you can do temperature on the wrist. Maybe you can't. But if they had that, people would buy it just because it'd be a COVID detector. It would be hugely valuable.
Except well, no, in France, that, but, where they wouldn't give them the location data.
Yes, right. But that's it. But that's yeah. But that's it's not just people are going to become healthier in general, not just when there are devices on their wrist that inform them, hey, your pulse has been racing for the past 2 hours, or you've got abnormal ECG for some reason. It's when it's just the simple fact that it gives people greater day-to-day awareness of what their normal is day-to-day. Mm-hmm. That it's I keep my oxygen sensor like on the desk here, not because I feel as when the Rona gets me, it's going to get me when I'm at my desk. it's so that every now and then and every day I will take a reading and I will be able to figure out, okay, 98, 99, that is my normal. So that if suddenly there it's 92, I'm feeling pretty much okay, maybe a little bit tired, I'll know that, oh, wait, that is really, really low. I'm going to have to really keep on top of this. Just the other day, I did my first big grocery shopping for 3 weeks because it feels like such a pain in the butt to do now. But first grocery shop in 3 weeks. So I had like 15, 20 pound like carrier bags of groceries. I had to make four trips up the stairs to get them into my house. And at the end, I don't want to get people worried. It's not like I felt like I was having a heart attack, but I was like, you know what? I could have taken those stairs a lot slower than I did, or made more trips than I actually did. I feel like I just want to really sit down right now and stay sitting down for until this passes. But because I have numbers to back you up, it's like, okay, immediately I'm saying that no, it's not as though like my blood is sufficiently oxygenated. I'm just out of breath. not to say that I would say, okay, well, now I can't see in color anymore. And my face is drooping and my left arm has gone painful. But hey, this watch says that my blood, it's not that I would have done that. It's just that I have an awareness that for the next 3 or 4 minutes, I'm not going to worry about it. I know what normal is, but if I got that sensor on and no, this is not normal. Okay, let's keep it on and keep taking a look at it. And that, okay, my blood oxygen level has been going lower and lower and lower. Even though I just feel tired, I'm going to have to take the next step on this. So that's what's exciting, to say nothing of what machine learning will do once it's basically comparing your normal to other people's normal and looking at deviations, comparing that to not only that, but he also stumbled a lot more over the past 3 or 4 weeks than he has normally. We can also tell that it is on the same foot. We're not going to diagnose something, but we are going to give him we're going to create a report that because we see on his calendar, thanks to communication with his general practitioner, that he has his annual checkup next month. We are going to get every year when you have a checkup, you push a button, it will generate a PDF of just data that if you want to review it, if you want to share it with your doctor, you can. That's the stuff that will continue to create miracles. And I just hope that Android users are deemed worthy of saving.
What was it for you, Renee? The bands, right?
No. So, well, I mean, but before it was even announced, like there was things I just knew that I wanted. Like I wanted a way to better get my notifications. I wanted a way that didn't mean every time I opened my iPhone, I'd dive into Twitter or YouTube for half an hour. And I wanted things that were just like effortless. Like, you know, you go in and it recognizes you, it authenticates you. There were these major things that I wanted, and they delivered all of those things with the first one. It wasn't fully formed yet, you know, and there was a lot of cruft on top of it that they whittled away nicely over the intervening years. But it's gotten to a point where, like, if I forget to charge it, or I forget my charger and I'm not wearing it, my arm feels like worse than naked. And I'm just so used to looking at it. And now I have, like, during most days, I have the Infograph watch face and it has my entire day ahead of me. I can see everything in a glance. And tap to pay has been ubiquitous in Canada for a decade. So I tap to back when I could still leave the house, I tapped to pay for everything. It was just so easy. I use this analogy, and it's apropos for me. My father got the Apple II because he didn't want to have to drive downtown to get on the IBM mainframes. And I got an iPhone, and I could run iMore for years on an iPhone if I had to and didn't have to go running back to my Mac. And I have my Apple Watch. It can't do anywhere nearly what my iPhone can do, but it can do a small, critical, brief subset of those things so well, so conveniently, and so without further distraction that it's just become invaluable to me. And I can't think of not having it anymore.
Yeah, just very, very quickly. One of the other reasons why I pulled the trigger on buying that watch was because I find that I'm missing text messages, particularly from family members, and they'd like to like text message, because I don't have the need to. I'm leaving the house rarely enough that it's usually just to take a half hour walk where I'm going to be doing nothing. So I don't. Oftentimes, like, my phone will just like stay on the charger or stay on the desk for days and days at a time without being anywhere near my range of attention, and the ability to simply have like on my wrist, oh, by the way, here's a I can get the stuff that I really, really want to have access to without needing to carry around my phone, even, or even have the temptation that I'm bored for 10 seconds, but hey, I'm gonna go and check Instagram or see like if I've got any photos I need to post. So that's what I really wanted. That's really, really wanted for, and that's what I get to have.
Andy, you do realize that means you can't tell your family now, oh, sorry, my phone wasn't near me.
Whoops.
Well, you've been caught.
Unfortunately, I'm sure that whatever app they want to use to message me with is not supported by this inferior Android-based device.
My mom likes the bigger phones, the plus-size phones, because she reads just everything on them. But they're so big, she doesn't have it all. It's either in her purse or like on the table. And now her Apple Watch, she looks at it, and she can see if it's like one of her kids or one of her friends texting or calling. And the microphone and speaker are so good now, I can't tell half the time when people are answering me on their Apple Watch.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty amazing. By the way, public service announcement from iMore. If you send your Apple Watch to Apple for service, take the band off or it will not come back.
Yeah.
What are they R.I.P. doing with all those extra bands, I wonder?
Well, I mean, obviously, that's a good-looking band. I want it for myself.
It's actually in their Apple support document. It says, don't include any accessories. Because we're not going to send them back. They take them off.
Yeah.
There's probably a bucket next to the mail in the mail room where they just throw all the old.
Well, if you've been sweating with that for 5 years, yeah, they're doing you a favor.
Nobody wants
a filthy, sweaty DNA filled bucket.
My guess is this was recently clarified, because there's probably a level of just I don't want to have to deal with trying to remember to make sure to send this watch band back. I bet. There's been a number of times where the support tech people, they have to take the band off so that they can do the work. And then they go, oh, where did I put that band? Does it go with this one or does it go with this one? And some people may have not gotten their bands back, or they got someone else's band.
That's a good point. So just no bands.
And so they probably decided, let's not worry about this anymore. Let's, you know, not put it on the tech guy to have to worry about sending the right band back with the right case. Let's just tell everybody, if you send in your watch band with your watch, you probably won't get it back. Just that's it.
Yeah, and of course, I always tell people when they bring in their laptops to copy your hard drive, because there's no guarantee it's coming back with the same data on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always do a wipe and reinstall.
Yeah.
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 Last item, and then we're going to get to your picks of the week. This could be my pick if you happen to have $499,000 lying around. This is a replica of a 1979 Porsche 935 that Apple sponsored at Le Mans. It's beautiful. Really love
how it looks.
It's got
Schiller and Q written all over it.
Oh, just gorgeous. It's not the original. It's a replica. DuPont Registry is selling it. Or, you know, if you can't afford $500,000, $4,414 a month.
No biggie.
For like 100 years.
But you got 2% cash back if you pay for it with the Apple Card, which would only be appropriate.
Apparently, Jobs and Woz were interested in Le Mans Racing. Dick Barber Racing has had Apple, or had Apple as its sponsor for years. And so... I love the old six color.
Leo, you're burying the lead. They announced CarPlay for older Porsches, and that means just so many people in Silicon Valley are making appointments right now to get. When I was one of the, not the most recently, but a couple of years ago, Singers were super popular there, and that's when you take an old Porsche and you fully modernize it, but it's still an old vintage Porsche. And I think they started at like $1 million, and they were just people talking. Like, it's that car culture in Silicon Valley. There are so many engineers who have like original Next stock or like original or like they all they want to do is code. They have no need for material things. They have more money than they can ever spend. But boy, do they like their cars.
I think the most interesting thing I learned in this article is that the original is owned by Adam Carolla.
Wow.
It was originally, he bought it for $4.84 million. It's now worth $8 to $10 million. Man, I got to get some of that podcasting money. This guy, clearly, he owns 12 race cars driven by Paul Newman. It's in that collection.
What you need is a channel called Powerful Leo and then Leo Clips. And then you need like a bunch. Yeah.
How did Adam Carolla get so loaded? Yeah. Was there that much money in the man show? What's going on there?
But I can give you a lower cost option. This has been I'm going to show you something that's been kicking around my office for a while. Maybe this is the time I build it up. You can buy model kits of like that model of Porsche just because lots of companies make it in like 1/24th scale. Somebody has on eBay has gone ahead and made a sticker set, like a decal set.
So cute.
Just put that the stickers on your car.
So if you buy that model, any maker's model kit of that car that year at that scale, it's like only like $10 or $12. If you just do like an eBay search for like Porsche Apple racing car sticker set. I've had this for a year. I know. And now I've added that to my list of things I might want to do during quarantine, projects I want to do. I'd seen that article, and that got me like putting a couple of these model kits on my watch list. But yeah, they're just like standard like decals, and they're going to like slip off decals. So yeah, and you get the whole set.
I love that.
Yeah.
Did you do models when you were a kid?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Although I never did them the way that I never twigged to the fact that the reason why they look so good is because people custom paint these things. Uh-huh. Why is my race car gray? It's supposed to be like this beautiful blue.
I did the Star Trek models when I was a kid. All like the Klingon ships and the Enterprises, yep. And those were fun.
So yeah, you can buy their models for this. You can buy and. I think putting those decals on would be really great. That would be so cool. Mm. Lori, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week this week. So this isn't new to most people. Everybody's going to have heard of them. John Krasinski has a YouTube show right now called Some Good News. And I am brought to tears every. Yes. I'm almost brought to tears right now just talking about
it's
it.
It's so amazing.
It's Alexander nothing but
Hamilton.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's nothing but good, positive stories, feel good stories, heartwarming stories about things that are going on right now. It ranges all over the place. So sometimes it's talking about healthcare workers, or sometimes it's just talking about, you know, somebody who got married over the internet, you know, just all good stuff. And you're just constantly choked up with joy and happiness every time you see it. And I was watching the episode, the second episode where the cast of Hamilton sings
incredible?
To this young girl who couldn't go see Hamilton because of the shelter in place order. And they all sang to her, and it was so sweet. And just this kind of stuff that's going on, and John Krasinski having a level of celebrity that allows him to kind of make these, like, bridge these gaps between, you know, the everyday people and the celebrities. It's just such a sweet thing to see that happen, and gives you something to feel good about.
Yeah,
so
this week This week he had a potluck with Guy Fieri, Martha Stewart, David Chang, and Stanley Tucci. A Zoom potluck. What an idea, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know whose idea it was for him to do this. This is only the fifth episode. He does one a week. They're clearly heavily produced. Lots of money going into these. I have the feeling that I thought this when I first saw it. Oh, his manager and agent have been trying to get him a late night gig for a long time. Here's an opportunity. This guy's better than anybody else on late night right now. He's the next Tom Hanks. He's lovable.
In case
he's
the Marvel
sweet.
Deal falls through.
In case the and to watch Stanley Tucci make a Negroni in his kitchen is well worth the time. I could do without Guy Fieri, but that looks like some pretty good chili in there. Anyway, yeah, I agree 100% with you. Yeah. Some good
and news. It's just sweet and good and just makes you feel good about it. So, yeah.
Really amazing. Martha Stewart, by the
great
way.
Pick.
Very, very nice kitchen. I
I'm all about that.
Do you Nicole have me. Kitchen envy?
I have serious kitchen envy over Martha's kitchen. Mr. Andy Nocco, your pick of the week.
Mine might be actually a dual pick because I'm a big fan of the of a YouTube series called Project Binky, and it's a they've you don't need to know what it really is about. They're taking a piece of junk 1982 Mini Cooper, all full of rust, and they're upgrading it with like a turbocharged engine and four-wheel drive and all this sort of stuff. And it's not like one of these, and now a montage in which 30% of the work gets done. It really is like building a car from scratch, because as they're going, they're making every single choice like, well, since we have the doors off, I really want power windows, and I really want to have some sort of like a crash protection bar in there. And they have to redo everything because they didn't think about it. It is super, super entertaining. But what I'm actually recommending is they use a tool that I have to buy for myself. This is the DigiPass electronic level. And so because you're used to these analog levels, so you're also maybe used to the stuff on your phone. But this has two really cool features. A, it's a digital readout, so you can actually see like when you get to zero. And also, I don't know if the microphone will pick it up. They have to make sure that things are good and level when they build things. So they'll place it on something and then drop it off the.
Pretty good.
I'm recommending it for like, so if you want to make sure your webcam is nice and level, you can put it on top there and then make the noise. I can't get it.
We heard a little beep
because,
there.
Yeah. Okay. But yes, I just like it so much, and I'm putting up lots of shelves now, and I do have like torpedo levels. I got like a 2 foot long, like bar level for carpentry. But then I'm like, I know I don't need this, but I really want, this is going to be like 2 days of really boring, tedious work. And I just want to be interrupted every now and then by being able to put this thing on top of the shelf and adjusting it until it's level. Then hearing, make the noise. Beep, 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 beep.
So, sounds great.
It's 40 bucks. So it's maybe twice as good as a decent torpedo level, but it's making me happy. And sometimes it's a lot less expensive than alcohol and a lot less damaging, I think.
Very nice. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
All right, so my eldest godson really, really, really wants me to pick Castlevania because he's been going through the entire Simon Belmont series of games on the Game Boy while he's been at home and thinks they're just magnificent. So he wanted me to tell the world to please experience the awesomeness that is Castlevania with him. But I'm also going to mention Pokemon Go has been doing this is near and dear to mine and Leo and Karsten and Lisa's hearts, yes, has been changing to try to get people to keep playing while they're stuck at home with COVID. And they've done some dumb stuff. They've done some really smart stuff. And it seems now they're doubling down on the smart stuff. So they've increased the range of gyms and stops so you can spin them from twice the distance, which is really good for me because I was just barely out of range of one. And now I'm in range of a Pokestop, which is great. But they also just yesterday added remote raids. So before you had to get a group of people together and go to a raid and do it. And now as long as you can see the gym, you can tap on it. You have to get something called a remote raid pass. And right now you have to buy them in the store, but they're selling 3 for a penny at the moment. You can tap on it, use one of these raid passes, and raid even if you're in your home, as long as you can see the gym, and you can get a bunch of people to do it with you. And I believe they're going to be adding invitations. So at some point, maybe I can invite you or Karsten or Lisa or Lori to a raid with me.
That would really nice.
I'm sure it helps them maintain their earnings. I'm sure that, you know, that's a huge consideration for them given all this. But it's also, it's really nice to be able to play without having to get all these people in cars. And it's just, it's so much nicer. And they're going to be doing a bunch of legendary raids like Darkrai and Virizion and a bunch of interesting things. And they're doing an event where every week there'll be a special focus on a certain, like Kanto and then Sinnoh, and you'll have Mewtwo available as a special bonus. And just a bunch of things that I think are really going to appeal to people who are stuck at home but still want to play a little bit. So credit where it's due. I think they've done some good stuff over the last week.
Yeah. And Harry Potter also apparently has added some features that make it a little easier.
Like roving fortresses.
Yeah, time of quarantine. That was always my complaint about Pokemon Go, because we live in a smaller rural area. And so it's not quite as easy as if you live in a big city. Yeah. Rating is a snap. So I think it's nice to make this a little bit easier for people who are in less populated areas. And it's a fun game if you haven't played it. It's really a lot of fun. Lisa makes
And when you do go for your city-approved walk, like your one city-approved walk a day, you can still enjoy that the rest of the time.
Yes. Really, you only get one walk a day?
No, some people joke about that because I think in some places that really is the rule. But here they'll ask you why you're out. And if they see you multiple times, they'll ask you why you're out multiple times. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole other
People should be able to take walks all they want. Wear a mask. Keep to social distance.
Yeah. They don't wear masks, though. Like, I see very few people here with masks, which irks me. And they're talking about reopening the elementary schools to build herd immunity, which is not something I want to hear from my provincial government.
Oh, God.
But that's, again, it's a whole other topic.
I've been having so much fun making masks. I bought a sewing machine. I just bought a big work table. It's getting to be a very expensive habit. Those masks are at least $100 each. But man, it's so much fun to make masks for family and friends. And I've been looking for new designs and stuff. And
you can donate them too. So keep making them. There's a lot of organizations that use them. Yeah.
Yeah. And here we have to wear masks now anytime we're out of the house in Sonoma County. So it's worth it. I kind of had a feeling that was coming. So we've been making some nice masks. It's fun. Unfortunately, so somebody in the chat room is pointing this out. I really like having t-shirt material on the inside because it's soft.
Yeah.
And I cut up a bunch of red t-shirts. And so the masks can't get washed because they've got red in them. And I have to wait till a red load before I can wash my mask. So use color neutral, color safe materials in your mask, my suggestion. Anyway, I think we have wrapped up this episode. I thank you so much, Renee Ritchie. He's available on YouTube as Renee Ritchie. Also on Twitter.
It's so hard to remember.
As Renee Ritchie. Follow him. Subscribe.
So boring.
You're getting the number? Did you get the sufficient numbers now to really get, you know, the
I'm getting there. I'm about a third of where I was before. And I'm going back and forth with YouTube on some of it. Because I figure they're overworked now. So everything is taking forever. And there seems to be a lot of confusion. But I'm trying to work through it. So I'm about a third of the way. Back.
I want you to get that 100,000 button, baby. You got to get that silver 100,000, man.
Me too. Yeah.
Do they? I think somebody said if you publish every day, it's better for you. You're publishing almost every day now.
Yeah, I mean, like they say consistency, but there's just so many factors. They just rolled up a new thing telling you what time most of your viewers are online. But then at the bottom, it says time of publication does not affect long-term viability of a video. And I was like, what are you saying to me, Google? Are you saying that we bugged you so much for this feature? You're giving it to us, but telling us it's useless at the same time? It's just so passive aggressive. So I don't know.
At this point, when you first go to a channel and you see four or five videos, it's like, well, I don't want to invest in something if he's going to. Yeah. But it's pretty, now your grid's starting to fill up. The quality looks good. The content's phenomenal. I think that what's going to happen is it's going to be a snowball and it's going to start really rolling. Mm-hmm. I really do.
I think you're on your way. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I'm really happy for you. Renee Ritchie on the YouTube. Andy Iannacco, when's your next appearance on Boston Public Radio GBH?
The mighty GBH. 11:30 a.m. on Friday. Just go to WGBHnews.org to listen to it live streamed, or the next day they will have it uploaded for your enjoyment.
I will always have a thing in my heart for GBH. I grew up listening to them in Providence, Rhode Island. They used to have books reading every Saturday night. I used to listen to that, and it's the first place I ever heard The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So there's a special place in my heart for GBH. The public radio station.
I wish my parents had lived long enough to see this happen, because they would have been like, your parents, like they love that you're doing well, but when you're in a job like mine, they don't understand what it is I do for a living, because that job really didn't exist when they were during their day. And it's like, wait a minute, WGBH, we know what that is. Radio, we know what that is. So they would have been proud.
Isn't that great?
It's a big deal for me. Thank you. I enjoy it.
And of course, wonderful Lori Gill. Are you going to do any? Maybe you can get on Krasinski's show and do a little sick burn performance for him. That would be awesome. Yeah.
That'd be so great.
Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah. But actually, what I want to plug right now is Renee Ritchie. go watch his videos.
Go.
I think, was it yesterday, Renee, that you had an interview with Justine? I don't remember her last name right now. Zarek, thank you. About the Logic Pro coming to iPad. It's so good. It's so good. Every day or almost every day, he's putting out some new, really great, well-researched, well-discussed thing. So
that's awesome. That's
fantastic. My plug.
Thank you, Lori.
Yahoo! We do Mac Break Weekly on Tuesdays round right after iOS Today. You know, it just start at 9 a.m. Pacific. That's when iOS Today begins. Around 11 a.m. we get to Mac Break Weekly. Then it's Security Now after that. This is a very good day to stick with Twit all day long. So this show's on 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1700 UTC. You can tune in live if you want, twit.tv/live. There's video and audio there. You can ask your Amazon Echo, Echo, play Twit live on TuneIn, and it'll start playing it for you. You can get on-demand versions of the show nicely, you know, edited to fit into a small box like your phone. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/MBW. You can also subscribe. In fact, that's the best thing to do. Find your favorite podcast application and subscribe to Mac Break Weekly, and that way you'll get it automatically every Tuesday the minute it's available. Thanks for being here. I have to say, though, time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.